Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I just love that bagpipe sounding guitar. That was really magic. I remember when it first came out. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn. We have completed a broadcast week here in the midst of the middle of August. And welcome to it. It is an absolutely beautiful day. It is a magnificent evening here in the hills and hollers of what's left of wild, wonderful West Bicod, Virginia, almost level West Virginia. An exquisite day. Someday it is actually my dream to, I don't know, get one of the, figure out some way to do Friday on the front porch, on a front porch, or even a back porch, or a side porch on a day like this. Because to come inside from that warm mid-August sun, it's a chore. It's a chore. It really is. And I would not come inside save for anything but this. But we have a virtual front porch, and that sun still shines, and it's still warm on our faces. And the rock salt helps the ice to melt a little bit faster around those long necks in the zinc galvanized wash tub. They're up to their bottle caps in it. And help yourself. And take that ice cold bottle and roll it across your face. And feel that cool, cool goodness. If you opted for the sweet iced tea, well, it works just as well with a tall glass iced tea tumbler. Just feel that cool against the warmth that the mid-August sun puts upon your visage. It is a beautiful day, a beautiful evening. And thank you very kindly, first of all, for all the good wishes you have sent, all of you, Agnes's way. I told her and showed her emails and so forth, and she was touched. We always are by your kindness. It is it's just sweet and neighborly and good. Thanks to those of you who contributed last night and through the remainder of the day. To try to get us up toward our middle-of-the-month fundraising goal, we are that much closer. We are a little bit over $650 toward our middle-of-the-month goal of $1,250. That's what keeps us on the air. That's what keeps things rolling here. And just a program reminder along those lines, because of Agnes's upcoming surgery, we will have a show on Monday. There will be no show on Tuesday or Wednesday when the surgery is actually scheduled. So please take that into account. I don't know if we'll have a Thursday or a Friday show. It really depends upon how the surgery goes. But on Monday, we do have a very special program for you. I'm just tickled pink. One of the people in entertainment, writing, TV, whatever, one of the few people, perhaps the only person of whom I may fairly say that I'm an actual fan, is going to be on the program. Anthony Bourdain, author of Medium Raw, A Bloody Valentine to the World of Food and the People Who Cook, will be on the program at the very beginning of the program. And I encourage you, first of all, to get the book and read it however you may. It is enjoyable in the extreme. And then to tune in, and as well to tune in for the conversation. Being a fan, I've heard a lot of interviews. And I can only imagine what it must be like to be an author and do as many interviews promoting a book as what Mr. Bourdain has done and still try to somehow keep them fresh and keep them informative. Somewhere along the way, there has to be an element of, I don't know, Bob Seger moaning the lyrics to Turn the Page, or Spinal Tap yelling "Hello Cleveland" in Denver. It has to kick in. So, as a favor to myself, and as a means of trying to let Mr. Bourdain know that I actually read the book, and because I read the books I do interviews on, that's why there's not a whole bunch of book interviews here. But to let him know not only that I've read the book, but that I also am cognizant of the fact that these things probably are not enjoyable. If we can make it enjoyable for him, it will be that much the better. So you can hear the attempt Monday evening, starting at the very beginning of the program. And I'm ferociously going back over my already dog-eared and paper-clipped and tabbed and post-it noted and annotated copy to see if I can't sort of pull out things that the average I've got to do an interview today radio personality probably slid right past. That's my hope, at least. That's my hope. So that's the program announcements. Just remember, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday of next week are maybes based upon Agnes's condition post-surgery. Okey-doke. Cool. Now, as to Friday on the front porch, I thought we might begin the program this evening with a visit to Bob's virtual interweb tubes blackboard. You know, Glenn Beck has a real one, because he's got a real production budget. I have to have an imaginary one. Hell, this isn't video, so I don't even have a telestrator. But who wants to be John Madden anyway? So with that in mind, I thought we might go to the Bob's virtual interweb tubes blackboard and pay a visit to James O'Keefe. Once again, the conversation that we had, I believe it was Tuesday, wasn't it? Yes, it was Tuesday. Matt Osborne, Brad Friedman, and I, going back over the anatomy and the history of the filthy smear tactics of the right wing. Well, we were ahead of the curve again. Of course, that's the beauty of being ahead of the curve. You don't know you're ahead of the curve while you're ahead of it. You have to let the curve catch up, and you went, huh? And then you run out ahead again. But it turns out that we were. Because Mr. James O'Keefe has reared his ugly little head again, fresh from a guilty plea to entering federal property under false pretenses. Why he's not in prison, I don't know. But fresh from that guilty plea, James O'Keefe, the creator of the phonied-up, dummied-up, ginned-up, rubed-up, faked-up Carnival Midway video known as the Acorn video, in which he was not dressed as a pimp, has hit the lecture circuit. Now, I don't know anything about Mount St. Mary's University, but it sounds rather kinky and perverse, if you ask me. Then again, I have a dirty mind. But O'Keefe was apparently given money to go and address students at Mount St. Mary's University. Were they journalism students? Well, that doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. But anyway, he did. And hence tonight's visit to Bob's virtual interweb tubes blackboard. I give you James O'Keefe.
I can't get to the point where they finally admit to me that I've gone too far. And then they say that this is a more...
Oh, dear, it's one of those universities, isn't it? You hear the laughter? Maybe this is kind of like the crowd that clapped, the crowd in Florida that clapped in that clip we ran last night of that weird woman in Florida calling for the building of concentration camps. Maybe it's that kind of a university, Mount St. Mary's.
How is this immoral? Belloc has said that salary, you know, shouldn't salaried public servants be perpetually watched and kept under control, be suspicious? I think this is the nadir of morality. I think this is the most moral thing you could possibly do.
Time to go to the blackboard.
Time to go to the blackboard. Did you catch that? It kind of flew by, so it's okay if you didn't. Belloc has said that salaried, shouldn't public servants be perpetually watched, be kept under control, be suspicious? We won't blackboard that one because trying to diagram most anything that comes out of James O'Keefe's mouth is an exercise in psychosis. But it's the next thing. I think this is the nadir of morality. I think this is the most moral thing you could possibly do. It's one or the other, Jimmy. It's not both. What? What, Lassie? Little Jimmy's down a well? Good! Come on, Lassie, let's go fishing. I think this is the nadir of morality. I think this is the most moral thing you could possibly do. Poor little Jimmy has found himself a pretty new word, only similar to that wonderful, wonderful clip in The Princess Bride. He keeps using that word, only, well, you know, there's a problem. You know what that problem is, right? This is that problem.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable! You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. And this isn't a case of thinking, this is a case of knowing on my part. That word, nadir, doesn't mean what he thinks it means. I think this is the nadir of morality. I think this is the most moral thing you could possibly do. It's either one or the other, because nadir means the lowest point to which one can point. It's the lowest of the low. In other words, James O'Keefe, through the office, the goodly offices of the blessed God of irony, has admitted he's a scumbag. Because, in fact, the hit piece he did on Acorn and the hit piece that he did, that he attempted to do on Mary Landrieu's office, just like the hit piece that was done on Shirley Sherrod, are, in fact, as low as you can go. The question, though, is whether the students at Mount St. Mary's realized it. Because they thought he was funny. So, James O'Keefe, welcome to the Bob Kincaid Virtual Interweb Tubes Blackboard. This is your word for and today's word from Unity is nadir. As low as you can go. Just like you, James O'Keefe. Last night, of course, we had on the program, the clip on the program, toward the end of the program, the creepy right-wing lady from Florida who wants to build internment camps for not sure who. If she could get away with putting you and me in it, I'm sure she'd be happy to. But welcome to the America where what was once only said among adherents of given sects and then was once only said behind closed doors is now said openly. We go now to the Rialto Unified School Board in San Bernardino, California. And an individual by the name of Dan Schroender. Dan Schroender. Dan Schroender is a neo-Nazi. You know what? What's the difference? There's neo-Nazi, paleo-Nazi, Nazi. With all due respect to Gertrude Stein, a Nazi is a Nazi is a Nazi is a Nazi. Here's a fun one for you. Dan Schroender is a retired school teacher. Yes, this Nazi was in the classroom for God knows how many years teaching God knows how many little minds, and Lord knows how many he befouled with his nasty, vile, pornographic, sick, twisted Nazi ways. I am, as we speak, looking at a photograph of Dan Schroender standing in front of the classic red National Socialist flag, the Nazi flag with the white circle and the black swastika in it. Dan Schroender is, of course, also wearing a red T-shirt. Retired school teacher Dan Schroender, also a professed white supremacist. I'm looking at the photo. He's got nothing to feel supreme about. Has announced he will seek election to the Rialto Unified School Board in San Bernardino. Here's the fun part. You gotta... Nazis. He announced his campaign last Tuesday on, this past Tuesday, on his Aryan Nations blog. What are you doing with hair, Dan? Isn't that supposed to be shaved? Well, he's trying to mainstream. He said on his blog, this is a quote, would not let his ideology affect his policy making if he were elected to a district. Somehow I'm skeptical of the claim. Really, I am. Because, you see, San Bernardino County, California, has a population made up of more than 27,500 students. Of those 27,500 students, 75% are Latino. 15% more are African American. But he's not going to let his Nazi ways influence policy-making decision with regard to those 90% of the students in the school district whom he considers to be less human than himself. A news story in the not too distant past in the Contra Costa Times noted, quote, in April, Schroender, who at the time identified himself as Dan Collins, said he delivers racist flyers to Rialto neighborhoods to let people know that the white race is not going to go out with a whimper. That's a quote, not going to go out with a whimper. Some of the flyers, the Contra Costa Times reports, invited residents to honor Adolf Hitler's birthday. Remember, he was dropping them off in April. Other flyers used, the news article says, racial epithets, but let's put it this way in light of the information we had arising last night. Other flyers used Dr. Laura Schlesinger language to describe blacks and Latinos and closed with the following. Happy Easter to you all from your friends at the Aryan Nations. When queried about the complaints arising from his candidacy, Dan Schroeder, who said that he would not allow his racism to affect his policymaking decisions, said that the controversy was not real and that it was fake and phony and that it had been ginned up as a hatchet job done by the Jew media. Wait a minute. Nope, still not Jewish. The Jew media. Now, to be fair, I make a mean matzo ball soup. I really, really do. And my potato pancakes are, I'll put them up against just about anybody's. But I'm sorry, it still doesn't qualify me as the Jew media. Of course, there's the additional fact that there's no such thing as the Jew media. I mean, for God's sakes, even in Jerusalem, it's the Israeli media. You know, Haaretz, Jerusalem Times, that kind of stuff. But not the Jew media. Then this guy is, he's a writer, Dan Schroeder, who was once a public school teacher and taught innocent children and did what God knows what to their poor little brains. And he has written blog posts that, let's see, here's the title of one. White children being deported despite being born on U.S. soil.
Wes, Edith.
Then there was this scintillating blog post. God, I wish I had time. No, I don't. Smurfs, Aryan puppets, or harmless cartoon toys? That's right. Smurfs, Aryan puppets, or harmless cartoon toys. Oh, God, somebody get him a seat in the Jerry Falwell Arena right there next to the sign that says Tinky Winky's gay because he's purple. What will be interesting to find out is just how many, rather like the Dave Chappelle bit from a few years back where he was the only black member of the Klan because he was blind and didn't know he was black. What will be interesting in this race will be to find out how many votes Dan Schroeder gets. It's almost impossible not to get a couple. Because you always have a couple of morons who go into the booth and go, I'm going to screw with everybody. I'm going to look at that crazy bastard. But it'll be curious to see in a school district comprised of 90% black and Latino and black students. It'll be interesting to see how many votes Dan Schroeder gets. What gives me pause for reflection, however, is the fact that I fear he will get more than you and I are either comfortable with or willing to contemplate. Oh, this is going to be a busy little Friday on the front porch. One last note, since we've got Tony Bourdain coming on the program on Monday, a little note from the Gulf. Susie Madrack reporting over at Crooks and Liars. I'm a big Susie fan. She went over to the Solve Climate blog and found the following. In the small towns of coastal Louisiana, this is Dateline Hopedale, Louisiana. In the small towns of coastal Louisiana, the widespread consensus is that the oil is far from gone. Because remember, we've been told the oil's gone. It just got up and flew away one night. It took our eyes off of it. It left and it took some of our jewelry with it and the family silver. The oil's gone. No, it's not. In the small towns of coastal Louisiana, the widespread consensus is that the oil is far from gone. Fishermen return from working on cleanup crews or from recreational angling trips with stories of crabs whose lungs are black with oil. or oysters with shells covered in sludge. They take photos and carry tar balls home like talismans to show what they've seen. They talk about their fears with anyone who will listen, and often their voices are tinged with panic. Yet a government report released last week by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said that 75% of the oil has been cleaned up, dispersed, or otherwise contained, apparently by oysters and crabs. And the Food and Drug Administration reports that all of the samples of seafood that have been tested since the oil spill, none have shown evidence of contamination. Of course, if you test seafood that you're going out and buying at the Wally World that says wild caught in Thailand, you know, what do you expect? I'm just saying. While some of the coastal seafood industry agree with these assessments, a majority seem to view the news with a sense of betrayal. The cleanup, this is Karen Hopkins of Dean Blanchard Seafood, which accounts for about 11% of the U.S. shrimp supply on the barrier island of Grand Isle. The cleanup isn't even close to being done. Then there's Dawn Nunez at the counter of the shrimp wholesale business and deli she owns in the tiny fishing town of Hopedale. The last thing I want to do is scare anyone away from the seafood down here, but I'm not eating it or feeding it to my children. I can't advise anyone else to eat it either. I read that quote, and I sort of had to push back from the monitor for a minute. Do you realize what an act of personal integrity that was? Dawn Nunez, she owns a wholesale business, shrimp wholesale business in a deli. It's in Hopedale, Louisiana. And she said, the last thing I want to do is scare anyone away from the seafood down here. But if I'm not eating it or feeding it to my children, I can't advise anyone else to eat it either. Apparently, integrity runs in the family. Dawn's husband is Marty Nunez. And he said, and at the time, according to the story from Solve Climate Blog, he was, at the time of the quote was taken, he was pulling a clump of oil-ridden marsh grass out of a plastic bag, and he said, there's people fishing where this is at, or worse than this. I can't understand how they say things are getting back to normal. Dawn Nunez went on and said, our fishermen bring home grass and tarballs, and then we watch the news and they say there's no sign of oil. Where did it go? Where did millions of gallons of oil go if it's not in the Gulf? Really, it went into the oysters, it went into the shrimp, and it went into the crabs, among other things. And it went into the grass, and it went into the marshes and the estuaries and the sand. It's all gone. Shh. Nothing to see here. This is not the oil spill you were looking for. God, that is sad. We're going to compound the horrors of the BP disaster. It appears now with the lies about the BP disaster. By the way, if you want to learn more about the BP disaster, one of the people who has done some amazing reporting from the Gulf, or amazing reporting on the Gulf, about the Gulf, the BP disaster, is over at truthout.org. And his name is Jason Leopold. Real, live, honest to God, not-for-profit reporting. And therefore, reporting that you might be, that you can likely ascribe a little bit more credibility to. But I'm just blown away with the integrity manifested by Marty and Dawn Nunez. This is their own livelihood they're talking about. But they care more about the people eating the seafood that they sell than they do for their own well-being. And I don't know what kind of kudos the universe hands out. But when you do this, when you do that kind of thing, you like to hope that the universe has some sort of goodness rolling back around for them. It can't be helped. It has to. This is life-saving information. genuinely life-saving information. And potentially at their own hazard, they're offering it up. It's refreshing to see. What is not refreshing is to see the latest shenanigans and chicanery of the Obama administration Department of Justice and Eric Holder. Linda Hooper Bui, B-U-I, I apologize if I'm getting it wrong. Linda Hooper Bui is an ecosystem biologist. And she has offered up a first-hand account of some really vile, oil-coated, crude sleaze. Her first-hand account is over at thescientist.com, the-scientist.com. And Linda Hooper Bui has detailed the fact that the Obama administration and BP lawyers, what do you mean, wait, conjunction, what you hooking up words? Why am I even reading a phrase that says the Obama administration and BP lawyers? Shouldn't they be on opposite sides of the street? Shouldn't they be on opposite sides, ends of the county? Or, at the very least, opposite ends of the courtroom? One would hope. One would hope in vain. The Obama administration and BP lawyers, according to biologist Linda Hooper Bui, are making independent scientific research and analysis of the damage done to the Gulf region, something approaching an impossibility. According to Hooper Bui, the only scientists who are allowed to be part of the Natural Resource Damage Assessment, NRDA, that's a process that's being used to determine BP's financial civil liability. The only ones who get total access to contaminated sites and research data are people who have signed on board with the NRDA. Now, there's only one problem about that. The scientist, you know, the-scientist.com, the scientist contacted U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Environmental Contaminant Specialist and Department of Interior NRDA Coordinator Pete Tuttle. And upon inquiry, Pete Tuttle admitted, and this is a quote, researchers wishing to formally participate in NRDA must sign a contract that includes a confidentiality agreement. Another quote, that contract prevents signees from releasing information from studies and findings until authorized by the Department of Justice at some later, and here's an important word, unspecified date. Linda Hooper Bui broke it all down. She wrote, it's not hazardous conditions associated with oil and dispersants that are hampering our scientific efforts. Rather, it's the confidentiality agreements that come with signing up to work on large research projects shepherded by government entities and BP. And the limited access to coastal areas if you're not part of those projects that are stifling the public dissemination of data detailing the environmental impact of the catastrophe. They couldn't manage the oil spill, the oil disaster, but by God, they can manage the science, or at least attempt to. It's just goddamn sad. That's all it is sad. No, it's not only sad, it's criminal. It's also dishonest, duplicitous, cussed, and might well be life-threatening. And right there's the nasty little rub of the whole affair. So that's how we get Friday on the Front Porch started. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob, and this is The Horn.
Got 78 by Hank Snow. Walks down the street, shuffling his feet to a rhythm that only he knows. And I've seen him in so many places. I saw him the night I was born in a Bourbon Street bar. I received my first car from an old man so tattered. Wild occupation, living my life like a song. Coffee is strong as a cafe tomorrow. Donuts are too hot to touch. Just like a fool when those sweet goodies cool. I eat till I eat way too much. Cause I'm living on things that excite me.
Indeed, a strange situation. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the Front Porch. I am Bob, and the conversation lines are wide open for any as might like to avail themselves of the same. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 on your nickel. A couple of emails rolling in the interim. Let's see. Let's start at the end and work our way forward. Corey writing in, Bob, they say it's okay to eat seafood from the Gulf. Well, that is if you can find any or any alive. And sends along an article from Bloomberg, Gulf of Mexico dead zone grows as spill impact is studied. Dead zone. God, I thought that was only supposed to be a Stephen King novel. And then this from our buddy Brian in New Hampshire. Well, Bob, I know there's supposed to be delicious fish to eat when cooked just right, as you know. Well, I probably will not be eating, even if I could afford it, any Gulf snapper or Gulf shrimp and so forth, perhaps for the rest of my life. That's from Brian and Casper up in New Hampshire. And you know what, Brian? I have the same sense and I have the same feeling, and it grieves me. I won't say like you can't imagine, but just let me say this. I feel about Gulf shrimp going away and Gulf oysters going away. The sad and broken-hearted feeling it fills me with, I can only compare to the feeling that the crazy as a rabid loon Hutton Gibson would feel if they would tell him that the church wasn't going to be making any more magic crackers. Because, see, the seafood from the Gulf, it's sacred to me. And that's not just because I'm some gluttonous prick. It's because it's so deeply imbued in me. It is holy. It is holy communion. Back before it got ruined, to sit somewhere like the Acme Oyster House in New Orleans or the Gulf Shores steamer in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and I have more experience with the latter, and see that humongous mounded plate of whole shrimps, head still on, as long as little green garden snakes, the royal reds that don't get shipped out, that when they're 24 hours or less out of the water, actually don't require butter to dip in or cocktail sauce or anything, because they taste like butter. They're so sweet as it is. And to sit down to a plate of those and know that it came from, you know, an area just over the horizon there, out of your eyesight, and that the oysters are that fresh, and you can still smell the sea in the open shell. You really do feel like you're actually a connected part of a cohesive whole that is this sweet little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through the universe. You really do. You really, really do. And it's gone. And it may never come back, as Brian notes. It's gone. Tony, writing from Vegas, otherwise known as Zatoichi in the chat room, he said, the Prophet Muhammad once told a man that paradise is at the feet of the mother. Please send this along to Agnes. You are the mother of all Horn fans. We need you to be okay so we can sit at your feet every day. Hope everything goes well. And he sent along some pictures of dolphins because we told him the Agnes dolphin story. Did I tell you the Agnes Dolphin story? Remind me. I will. Brian says, oh, I understand, Bob. It'd be like us losing all the Maine lobsters up here in New England. I understand it's horribly cruel and disgusting, indescribably so, what's happened in this assassination of the Gulf of Mexico. Can you imagine in New England without clam chowder? Can you imagine? Can you imagine the Mediterranean coast without bouillabaisse and its attendant varieties? No. Can you imagine the fresh fish markets of Southeast Asia? Their stalls empty. It's an unimaginable horror. It's a horror. Ron writing in, backing up to the O'Keefe story. Bob, just remember, as they say, pseudo pimping ain't easy. Acorn is not a public government service. Was he talking about himself as the nadir? That's the whole beauty of it all, Ron. He didn't know what he was talking about as a nadir. He thought the nadir was the high point, not the low point. He was describing himself as the nadir of morality, thinking he was using the word to praise his own high-minded intentions. Instead, Dr. Freud sneaked up behind him and made his little lace slip show. 14 minutes before the hour, and let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
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 Yeah, Bob?
Yes.
Oh, wow, I got you. It's Lisa and Bob, Brandon's wife.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm so excited to get you. All right, we are in the car driving up to Oswego, but I was listening to some of your podcasts, and I had to call you. You were talking about the Dr. Laura thing?
Yes.
Yesterday?
Yes.
All right. Now, the word nigger. I've discussed this very often with white friends of mine. It's such a strange thing, because Brandon and I are black.
Okay.
And when I grew up, the word nigger was used frequently in our house. Brandon is am I not supposed to say that?
No.
I'm sorry.
No. For academic purposes, it's okay.
Yeah, because I'm not calling anybody that. But, you know, when I was growing up, the word was used in my house frequently. And the things that would be said amongst my family and people that I knew, like, for instance, we would say things like, you know, they're acting like niggas. Or if someone acted bad, we would say that's why black people aren't wanted, because they're being like Nick. So in a sense, it's a funny thing amongst black people. Black people tend to feel very bad about white people using the word, but amongst ourselves in private conversation, a lot of times we do use the word. This is honest and true.
But you don't use it as a positive. It still has its pejorative connotations, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. But there are some white people that I have spoken to that say that black people shouldn't even use the word at all, even to say that at all. Like, they should just completely wipe the word from their vocabulary.
Personally, I'd like to see, you know, and it's just, I would like to, because I grew up hearing it used by white people. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see it utterly gone from the language. If I had a magic button, I'd push it and it wouldn't exist anymore, because the thing that bothers me is that is always the recourse of the unreconstructed, unrepentant racist, you see.
Mm-hmm.
They say, "Well, black people use it amongst themselves, but I guess I can't use it." Well, that's racist itself. Which just makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at is that while there's no getting around the fact that it has been used in the white community, it's used in the black community because it was first used as a cudgel on the black community. The black community didn't start out calling each other that. The word did not come with them from Africa.
No, it definitely did not.
It's a
different thing with it.
It is a mispronunciation of the Latin word, which means black. I'll never forget as a little, you know, just a little bitty redneck, when I was 15 years old and got to travel with my Latin class to Italy. They took us to the place where Rome was said to have been founded. And by that point in time, we little rednecks had been taught not to use the word, right? And all over the Roman Forum, though, there were signs that said, "This way to the lapis," which means rock or stone, "niger," N-I-G-E-R. And that was how it was pronounced. But in Latin, that just means black stone.
Okay.
All right, but what happens is what happens is that these Anglos and Dutch and so forth and Portuguese, who were the progenitors of the slave trade, and it's largely probably the Portuguese and the Dutch, probably just mainly the Portuguese, who refer, and this is only speculation, but I'm going to go ahead with it because it makes sense.
Okay.
The Portuguese capture and kidnap and enslave Africans. They, in turn, turn them over to the Dutch or sell them to the English. And the Dutch and the English hear the word for black used by the Portuguese, as I've described it to you from the Latin, and it morphs into that vile and hateful word that is used not as a descriptor of a particular color, but as specifically applied to kidnapped, enslaved, tormented human beings.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, it becomes transferred into a lexicon of hate. And the next thing you know, because English was not the native language of the kidnapped Africans, they're using it on each other. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that the word was used by African slaves against other African slaves. You're crazy. Or that is shiftless and no account and won't do his work for Mars, you know. And so it gains literally a transracial and transcultural argot that becomes almost impossible to eliminate. And so when the civil rights movement rises up and African Americans seeking liberty, seeking freedom, consciously take it out of their vocabulary, then that leaves the crackers with it. And we almost had it beaten down, I honestly believe.
Well, I have conversations with people that I know, white people that I'm friendly with, and we always talk about the word nigger, and it just, Brandon is gesturing here like I shouldn't say this word, but, you know, we understand, at least as black people, that it's a terrible word, but it takes on such a different connotation when someone white uses it, and it doesn't make any sense. You're absolutely right. It's a terrible word, but somehow it's a whole different thing.
Oh, it certainly is.
People are sitting down at the table, and they're talking to each other, and they're saying he's acting like a nigger, or even like sometimes I hear something that somebody will say, you know, one of my friends is black, and I say, oh, you know, like that, like crazy, you know? Have you ever heard Chris Rock's skit about black people?
Oh, yeah, and I have all, and I'm,
oh,
and back before my entire vinyl collection was stolen, I was a proud owner of Richard Pryor's That Is Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm,
No, I just want, no, I want you, I won't, no, I won't say the word.
Okay.
You know, I used it last night, and I really did grieve. And I called myself into question for it. I won't question your use of it. But I will always call myself into question of it. I questioned whether or not I should have run the audio in which it was used.
I mean, Dr. Laura completely missed the boat about what the woman was saying. Completely. She was on a total another page. It was almost like she didn't hear what the woman was saying. And she was showing her racism, particularly when she was talking about her dinner party with her friend and her bodyguard and, you know, I want to have you come out and play basketball because white men can't jump and that's not racist. The hell it's not.
What is that now? Is that the new thing that the right wingers are using? Some of my best bodyguards are black?
I don't know what was going on with that woman, but she's strange anyway.
She's about 900 miles past strange because
yeah.
I forget who it was that posted it earlier today, but I read it and I was quite taken with the theory behind it because this one person wrote that word was by far the least of the awful things that Dr. Laura said.
Yeah.
The fact that she says if you're sensitive, don't marry outside your race. Well, let me just march through this one real quick.
Mm-hmm.
up until white Europeans started conquering and subjugating the rest of the planet, there was no such thing as a concept of race. For instance, if you go back again into ancient history, if you go back to the Romans and you go back to Caesar in his commentaries about the Gallic Wars, he will talk about the various and sundry tribes of the Gauls. But he doesn't refer to them as a race of Gauls. They are they are a tribe of barbarians. If you read the accounts of Gaius Marius's campaign in North Africa against the Numidian king Jugurtha, you will find that it refers to the tribes from which Jugurtha came, not race. Race was invented by white Europeans as an attempt to justify, via the creation of some phony baloney sense of skin tone superiority. It's ex post facto justification for theft, for rape, for pillage, for plunder. And so when she says, don't marry outside your race, Dr. Laura is using an antiquated piece of crap methodology in the first place. In the second place, she married outside hers. And that's a fact. Dr. Laura Schlesinger was not Jewish, okay? She was a nice little Protestant girl, you know? She was a shiksa. And she married a Jewish man. And for his sake, she converted to Orthodox Judaism. So, you know, it really is a case of physician heal thyself. She is a stunning hypocrite. There are things about how she treats women, and you know, unlike race, gender is very real. That thing was full of just nasty, sleazy, putrid attitudes that she maintains toward members of her own gender. This idea that she's supposed to just be quiet and not be so sensitive. I'm sorry.
She basically feels that women should be mothers, and that's it. That's the impression I get about her.
And largely sexist, sexless ones as well.
Hmm.
I'm really glad you called with this, though.
You know, I've been trying. I'm such a busy person that sometimes I figured that I would be on hold too long, and I said, you know, let me try, because we are here. Like I said, we're driving our godson to Oswego. And we're actually in the car now. Brandon's sitting next to me driving. Phillip's in the back just chilling out. And I said, let me just try to call Bob. See what he's doing.
I'm so glad you did. This is such a joy to talk to you.
Well, you know, you guys know so much more about politics than I do. You and Brandon could probably just take a whole night and just talk for hours and hours and hours. I'm not nearly as...
Oh, Brandon is an absolute joy. And he writes like an angel.
He does. He's the man. He's the man. And when you come to New York, we're gonna, you know, visit with you.
I'm gonna find a way there, and we're gonna have a Horn New York meetup one of these days.
Hey, don't you know it? It's gonna be fierce. I'm gonna love it. Brandon's gonna love it too. But
see, I was so bummed out when I had that nightmare flight to Utah. I didn't dare. I just, because of the way the day was going, I had like this 6-hour layover at Kennedy, but I didn't dare go into the city for as badly as I wanted to, because
okay,
I knew that the minute I left Kennedy, something would go absolutely sideways, and I'd be, you know, I'd be standing somewhere down in the Bowery with these suitcases and nowhere to go. And it was a little more than terrifying. So I sat tight at Kennedy, but the day will come. I know it. The day will come.
Okay.
Well, you guys have a safe drive and a wonderful weekend. And
it's so good to talk to you.
Oh, it's a joy. And tell Brandon to let up on the cringing, okay?
Well, he doesn't like me saying that. I guess he doesn't want to like disturb FCC rules, right?
No, we don't have any of those. God knows, you know, these are not the public airwaves. That's one of the things that blows my mind. You know, we have this arbitrary list of words. I can say them. I don't very often. But we have this arbitrary list of words that people on the public airwaves, you know, because they're the socialized public airwaves. It belongs to you and me and all of us as Americans. And these right-wing thugs get on it, and they're not supposed to use certain words relating to feces and certain body parts and certain euphemisms for the act of human physical intimate love. Why can't we add that word to it, the N-word? I mean, it's arbitrary in the first place. Why can't we add that word to it? Because, you know what? Tell me, which word is more offensive? The F-word euphemism for the act of physical love, or the hate-filled N-word that has been used to torment an entire class of human beings for 300 years? Which is more vulgar?
Oh, absolutely the N-word.
Yeah, but it's okay. Dr. Laura clearly proved that you can say that on the air. But if she had said effing N-words, well, by God, she'd be facing a $275,000 fine, and every station that ran that show would be facing a $275,000 fine. But since she only said the N-word, it's all clear.
Well.
Yeah, it kind of makes the head spin, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Well, she kind of makes your head spin, because I don't understand how she manages to even exist. But then all of these people are out here. Like Brandon will say to me all the time that I hope so-and-so. Like he told me earlier that he hopes Sarah Palin runs. And I said, I don't hope that she runs because there's enough nutty people out here that'll vote for her. And if the right people don't get out and vote, she'll actually be president. But I hope she doesn't run. Really, I you know, optimism is not one of my strong points when it comes to politics.
Well, I do say this much. I think Barack Obama could beat her like a barred mule.
Well, I'm a lot more scared
of what I perceive to be the real reality, that she is in fact a stalking horse for whomever will be the real candidate, and that person is likely Jeb Bush. I just ruined your weekend.
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't understand how anyone who works a 9-to-5 and is not rich could be a Republican. Yet I know people who are working class people who are Republicans. And I scratch my head and I'm like, what Kool-Aid have you been drinking? What drugs have you been doing? Because these people are obviously not for you. They're not for working people. You can see that in your paycheck. You can see that in your policies. But then they follow like sheep. And it scares me.
It should.
I don't think that you have to be politically astute, you know, with everything, reading every journal, every blurb, like how Brandon is. I mean, he can tell me everybody who's in Congress and whatever. But I know I'm looking at what these people are doing, and I'm like, they're not in my self-interest. What are they doing for me? What are they saying that relates to anything that will help me?
They operate only by fear. Witness Texas Republican Representative Louie Gohmert. You know, they've been waving the bloody shirt about those illegal immigrants for a few months now. Now with Louie Gohmert's invention of so-called terror babies, these are babies that Muslims come to America and have here so that they'll be citizens, and then they fly back home to Muslim land, and then in 20 years' time, the terror babies are going to come back and blow themselves up. Well, you know, at this point, I think it's safe to say that Louie Gohmert has gone from waving the bloody shirt to waving the bloody diaper.
Yeah, exactly.
So
people don't see it.
But fear, you know.
It's so obvious to me.
But you're enlightened. You're intelligent. Brandon, the rest of the Horn family aren't intelligent. So those appeals to our baser emotions, those appeals to fear, are not going to work on us.
Right, right. But you got a bunch of people out here who go right for it. They drink the Kool-Aid, keep on drinking it. They're happy to drink it. They'll argue with you.
Because they are terrified white people.
I had a coworker tell me that she admired Sarah Palin. And I said, what is it about her that you admire? And she said, well, I admire how she made it in a man's world in Alaska. And I said, that's all you admire her about? What about her policy? What about how she feels about government, how that she feels about herself, about you, about women, and whatever. And she couldn't say anything to me. Nothing. Just that she made it in a man's world. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, that entitles hasn't that been the challenge to every female that's been born on the planet since we threw out the mother goddess?
Yeah, but, you know, the cheeks. But this woman who's sitting there telling me this has a vote and can go to the polls. This same woman voted for John McCain. You know? There's plenty of them out here. It's scary. You can't sleep on anybody. And believe me, I work in law enforcement. Some of the things that I hear among some of my coworkers, scary.
You dare? Yeah.
Scary.
Very, very much so. And of course, you know, you live in New York. You live in New York, so at some point in time, you're going to see one of those sickening buses with the "Why Build It Here" ad on the side of it.
Oh yeah. Meanwhile, there are Christians that are doing heinous things, but no one says let's get rid of these Christians. But having that mosque over there in the World Trade Center,
makes you want to scream.
Just plain, it's logical to me, but they don't seem to get it.
Amazing.
They don't get it.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in, and like I said, have a wonderful drive. This has been a lovely conversation.
Oh, thank you, and make sure you see us if you can get down here. We'll make time. Believe you me.
I promise. I absolutely promise. One of these days it's going to happen. You take care, and y'all drive careful.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye now.
Wow. Well, these conversations don't happen on for-profit radio. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
I had to chime in on this Dr. Laura thing here, too, because, the way that the N-word is used, it seems to be... Not only, in my experience, it seems to be a very personal thing how people react to it. Because remember when the Imus thing, you know, the nappy-headed hose business, went down? When Sam Cedar had his Air America show, one of the news guys, this back when they actually existed and had news guys, was African-American. And he was in there, and they were discussing this issue, and they were using the N-word. And it wasn't censored or bleeped. And, in fact, said newsman gave Sam Cedar permission. Like, okay, we're talking about it in this way, and it's fine to bring it out because we need to discuss it that way. And, you know... And when I was in college, you know, one of my friends that I had there, he was African American, and he said, in a more colloquial way, said, "You're my N," in a term of endearment. But if you call me that, I'll kick your, I'll beat the hell out of you. I mean, it's just some people react to the word in different ways. I mean, that's just my experience.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, Garrett. But the thing that
I mean, there's no doubt that it's an ugly word. I mean, I'm kind of sheltered from a lot of the race politics because Vermont's kind of, you know, out of that air. So rural, it's not even funny. I mean, until I moved out here, the only people of color that I saw were on television. I'll be perfectly honest, but. You know, it's just, you know, but it doesn't shock me that Schlesinger would do it. I mean, I have a rather horribly un-PC term for her that I will not repeat on your air, and she lived up to it quite
well. Well, I love the fact that Bart Kopp just calls her Doc Meng.
Yeah, that fits.
And, you know, way up on the search engine results, if you type Dr. Laura Schlesinger dirty pictures, you go right to Bart Kopp, and his whole series of the Dr. Laura Schlesinger dirty pictures are hilarious.
Yeah.
They're hilarious. Of course, I got some crap on my Facebook page last night with a few good folks coming in, chiming in, and defending me. I tweeted that article from Huffington Post, the original article about her using the word, but there was this photograph of her. And I said, is that Dr. Laura or Keith Richards? If it's Keith Richards, he's looking bad. And I got crap for, well, Bob, don't do that. You know, call, you know, that's just, you know, attack her positions, not her appearance. But she attacks everything about everybody.
Even people that actually...
People on the radio that she can't see. She attacks their entire essence.
Yeah, and these people are willingly calling her in for help, and she doesn't even have a degree. I mean,
isn't that a little bit like the chicken going to Colonel Sanders for advice?
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, and besides, it's kind of belittling people, you know, for petty reasons is kind of how we, you know, cope with people we just don't like. I mean, I hate to get all psychological about it since I'm not one myself, but it seems how it is, you know, you rip people apart in the most visible way. I mean, that's how the
it was much more simple for me. I just called up the Huffington Post story and looked and went, you know, nightmare material.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just is. I mean, she is a scary person. She's, she's got the same disease that Cheney has, that, you know, just rotting from the inside out. Because she's not that horrifically old, and she's really, ugh.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, I hate to be mean, but it's kind of bizarre that she does have naughty pictures of her, because she's always been, I mean, inside and out, she's always
okay,
been.
Okay, that's one reminder from you and one reminder from me, Garrett. Any more and my eyes start bleeding.
Yeah, okay, that's. Also, it's a good thing we don't watch the football in Denver.
Oh, I know. Oh, that, yes, because...
Focus on the family.
Yeah, flush from their success with the Super Bowl, Focus on the Family has bought statewide TV ads during Denver Bronco games. You can't even sit, and again, it's the Super Bowl all over again. You can't sit back and enjoy a football game without being beaten over the head by some revolting member of the religion industry.
Yeah, and I fear though that it'll spread to other states like this one and Utah. I mean, there are some religious crazies in this state. We get spillover from Utah.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, you do.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know.
Oh, look, Colorado Springs is just a toxic cesspool of religion.
Yeah, of course, because that's the home of the Air Force. You know, what better place to make it spread than...
But you know what? Let me offer some balance on that, Garrett. It would be worth it to me to have to put up with a couple of Focus on the Family commercials if I could see Tim Tebow go into the game and get some really, really mean 312-pound defensive lineman just get to see him drive Tebow halfway through the turf.
Yeah.
That would be a beautiful thing.
I was thinking of you because
see, in the NFL, there's a great leveling that goes on because you don't make it to the NFL unless you're the best of the best of the best. And those 312-pound defensive linemen, they're damned fast 312-pound defensive linemen.
Yeah, they want them. I mean,
I'd like to see Albert Haynes. I'd like the Redskins. Do they have the Broncos on their schedule this year? Because if they do, I'd like for Albert Haynesworth to get off the bench so that he can have him some Tebow lunch.
Yeah, because I'm starting it right in front of the machine here. I can check it out. Because I was thinking of you in regards to Tebow, because I don't know if you know, but the NCAA football video game, Tebow's on the cover because he's graduated now and he can be on the cover. But here's the thing.
Does he have the haircut? No.
Not the Friar haircut, no. It's basically some old stock photo of him at Florida.
You know what I'm waiting for? You know what I'm waiting for, Garrett? I'm waiting for all the little fundies who bought their Tim Tebow jerseys, because it's one of, if not the highest selling piece of NFL merch right now. I'm waiting for all the little fundy football football fans to go out and get Friar Tuck haircuts just like Timmy.
Timmy! Yeah, but anyway, Tebow's on this, and no, the Redskins do not play Denver. But anyway, Tebow's on the cover of this video game, and in the Tuscaloosa area, the GameStop managers made a special slip cover.
Oh, I know. Wasn't that precious?
Yes, absolutely.
That showed Tim bawling.
Three images of it. Three different angles of it. It was classic.
I hope there were promotions involved.
Well, it was the GameStop managers in Tuscaloosa, so it was a promotion in and of itself, local to them. I mean, because people make custom for those sports games. People have been, since printers have advanced, people have been making custom covers.
Oh, have we had any word, and I just got to ask this since it is Friday on the front porch, has there been any word of how well or poorly Ndamukong Suh has done in his preseason workouts?
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard anything. I've kind of, you know.
There's another guy I'd like to see have a come-to-Jesus moment with Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he threw Colt McCoy around like a German Shepherd playing with a rag doll.
Yeah. I mean, because, well, actually, since I still have the computer machine here, let's find out. Because, I mean, inevitably he's going to play in some capacity.
I mean, I have this twisted pathology about Tim Tebow.
No, not lucky with Detroit either.
I have this twisted pathology with Tim Tebow because I want every great big defensive lineman or fleet-footed free safety who knocks the snot out of him. I want him to, you know, because it's good sportsmanship to reach down and pick him up. And you do that because you don't want him laying on the ground and getting a breather. Nothing sporting about it. Get your ass up. Every one of them that knocks, that slobber knocks him, I want him to take his hand and as they're pulling up, go, forgive me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
forgive me. Just... forgive me. Forgive me. Oh, yes.
Because, I mean, some of those big guys, they're also, like, the nicest dudes, like, ever. I mean, if you've ever hung out, I mean, the D linemen just, they seem to be. You know, they will hurt you on the field, but, you know, off the field, they're cool people. And, you know.
Yeah. But
because
that's
the thing. Haynesworth is going to be, I can't believe what they're putting Haynesworth through because, I mean, I've seen what the workouts to try and get him. It's insane. I mean, it's just like, wow.
Well, I think there's, to be fair, I think there's a little bit of sadism that runs through Mike Shanahan's being, he's a new coach and he's trying to establish that he's got control of the team, but right now he's fast on the way to losing control of it, as far as I can tell. Garrett, good talking to you. I'm going to hit the rest of these lines. You have yourself a great night.
Yeah, even though I get to watch the team that shall not be named, but here's the problem: it's in Texas. I will be seeing probably you-know-who or his wife. Yeah, I peeked in on Wednesday when the other Texas game was on TV, and I saw her next to Nolan Ryan. I'm like, ugh!
Next to Nolan Ryan? Pickles?
Yeah, he's, like, big supporters of them. He's been supporters of them since, because, I mean, he was playing when W owned the team. And he was big supporters of them when the Shrub went for the governors.
Oh, yeah. Dear God.
Yeah, because apparently Ann Richards got mean or something, and he just ticked him off, you know, just rubbed him the wrong way, and, you know, yeah.
Ew.
Now that, you know, because Ryan sits right behind the... behind this.
Oh, I just want to see the candid shot of her. Lupe, get me another margarita and a Darvon. Get me another margarita and a lower tab.
Well, she looked, you know, all made up and placid and, you know, nothing different from, you know, when she was
Hey, if you're chewing up oxys for the refreshing burst of flavor, you'll look all placid too.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's enough of me. Garrett, have a great night and a good weekend.
Yeah, you too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin and Phil.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing? It's been a while, and, you know, I've been catching up to your show, and it's Saturday morning, so we can talk.
Oh, okay, cool.
Two things. All that talk about seafood.
Yeah.
They made my shrimp and clam pasta sauce tonight. So.
You know how to hurt a guy.
Yes. Second, I'm going to be probably the final authority on black people using the N-word. I don't even give a tinker's you-know-what about Schlesinger. I expect Schlesinger to be Schlesinger. Okay? But it hurts me more when other black people use the word. Okay? Hello?
I'm right here.
Yeah. And that is, when we use it on each other, we are inflicting the self-loathing that the Calvinistic mindset has. And Calvinism is the religion of greed. It sanctions greed above all. They don't worship Jesus, they worship the dollar bill. Okay?
That's the truth.
And I'm telling you this right now, when we use the word on each other, think about the fortune that has acquired, even within the black community, off of that word. All I need to look at is the hip-hop industry. Because that's what brought the word back. That's what brought the word back into mainstream black vocabulary.
Yeah, and for me, there's a big difference, for instance, between using it as a quote of, say, Laura Schlesinger, or using it in idle conversation.
I don't like it when I hear other black folks use it as a term of endearment. And that makes me hate it even more. Because, again, it's that self-loathing that was put upon us in slavery to break us.
You know, Kevin, I will tell you that I, you know, we have never made a practice of using corporal discipline on our children here.
Yeah.
But one day my son came home and was telling me about how one of his very best friends at school is one of the very few black kids who are in the school. And he was telling me how this kid had come up to him and said, "How are you, my?"
Mm-hmm.
To my son. And just when my son reported that to me, there was something very visceral inside me that wanted to lash out at my son, and I kind of did. I said, "You know, look, I don't care under what circumstance you're using the word. You don't use it ever." Ever.
Well, the thing is, I don't think, and I understand your situation because you come from a background that does use it.
Yeah.
You know, culture, and I guess, unfortunately, I guess we all have to atone one way or another for the sins of our fathers. I know I do. Okay? But, I just say, because under certain circumstances, let's say how Mark Twain wrote to describe, you know, what's his name, Nigger Jim? Are you going
yes.
to think all the great masterpieces that he wrote? And Mark Twain did not have...
No. And in fact, you know, there have been efforts to, for instance, ban Huckleberry Finn from elementary schools because of the existence of that word.
Yeah,
and I take real exceptions with that.
Yeah,
because that's a form of book burning, in my opinion. Censorship is on the same plane and on a par with book burning.
Yeah, and also it's like To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm pretty sure the word is used a couple of times in there.
In particular, Lover. to describe Atticus Finch.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just a case of, why is that? I expect a racist to be a racist. You know, what I'm trying to do here with this call is probably enlighten a few of the black listeners out there. Okay? And a lot of this stuff, the reason why we call each other the N-word is because a lot of it is that deep-seated, Calvinistic, fundamentalist church who basically doesn't worship Jesus. They worship the dollar. They just use Jesus to get the dollar.
Jesus as the Brinks truck. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I love the song you play on every Wednesday. I love it.
I am forever in John Fox's debt for that, because that comes from the Chaser on the Australian ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
And another thing, you don't hear other groups of people, you don't hear Asians calling each other my gook or my whatever they will call each other. You don't hear Italians calling my WAP or whatever.
No, no. And in fact, what was that movie that the Jackie Chan made with
Chris Tucker? Russia.
And it was so funny to hear Jackie Chan's Asian accent saying, "What's up, my?"
Yeah. Well, it's happened here too in Korea. You know, one guy said to me, and I had to turn around and said, "Look, man." You know, and he didn't mean any harm by it, because really there is, here in Korea, I'll tell you this, there's no black or white or whatever. Either you're Korean or you're foreigner.
Right.
So
Korean, not Korean.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, a lot of white folks, particularly white folks from the American South and Cape, I mean, South African Afrikaners, come here very scared because, you know, white privilege.
Yeah, that's gone.
It's pretty much gone here. There's still a little bit, but they find it diminished a whole lot. I don't know if I said it in another call, but I've been involved with a woman from South Africa. You know, she's Cape colored, you know, mixed race.
Yeah.
So I've become very familiar with the whole South African community, which is very big here in South Korea in the English-speaking department, because, you know, there's a lot of just English. There's a program, because South Korea spends more on education than any other country, where they need professional English speakers. So that's how I got onto this thing. So, you know, you come across a lot of people from the United States and the UK, South Africa, Australia, you know, as teachers. So I've become a road for, like, the Afrikaners to get out of South Africa to pose as English teachers. So you find a lot of them out here, you know.
It's got to be a wonderful, just a tremendous experience, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. And the thing is, frankly, Bob, I don't see myself ever coming back. And you're talking about a hardcore New Yorker. I don't think I can go back to New York.
Well, you know, we're gonna be having Tony Bourdain on the show on Monday evening, and he had an episode at one point where he was talking about the fact that when he gets done with the whole TV gig, his intention is to move to Vietnam and stay.
Oh yeah,
and nobody loves New York more than, you know, Tony Bourdain.
Well,
nobody except every other New Yorker. Yeah.
Oh, but it's just like it's just so harmonious. And, you know, I mentioned to Andrea, that's the young lady who I'm involved with, name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, United States has had a military presence in every country in this region of the world, except for Mongolia. And they probably said the weather's just so damn bad in Mongolia. Okay, we could give that to the
Well,
Russians.
That's okay, though, because even though we haven't had a military presence, we're going to have a corporate presence. I don't know if you caught this podcast or not. But American coal mining interests have decided that the way forward to peace and prosperity for Mongolia is to blow it up. Wish I was kidding.
Yeah, okay. Oh, well, so much for the Mongolian.
So much for the planet.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's amazing that the United States has tried to, you know, every country, when you look at it, every country the United States has been in a state of war in this region.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to that Calvinistic treat. If you don't become exactly like one of us in the manner that we demand you to be, then, you know, you're a bad person. Hence the anti-Islamic, you know, rhetoric that's going on. And if any place where a mosque should be is in the area of 9/11.
That, or we remove all the churches, including the one that that played host to George Washington.
Exactly.
Either religious freedom for everybody or religious freedom for none.
Yeah. And the thing is, I happen to be a, you know, a member of the church that George Washington went to. That's what I was raised.
Oh, wow.
I was raised Anglican. You didn't know that?
No, I knew you were raised Anglican. I didn't know you were... Okay.
Yeah.
No, but there's that one... And it shows up in the shots of the attacks on the Twin Towers. It's a very, very old stone Episcopal church.
When I used to work around that area, that's why I used to go Ash Wednesday. Every Ash Wednesday, it became like a little ritual with me to go there and worship. Every Ash Wednesday. It's a beautiful church, too. If you ever go to New York, that's one of the places I suggest you visit. You know. But it's just, that word has been imposed upon us through Calvinism. Okay? You know, DC to Calvinism, which talk about, you know, which Catholic guilt has nothing on. When you have deep-rooted Calvinism, it makes Catholic guilt look like a walk in the hay. You know?
In many ways, yes. But no, the Portuguese were the first to explore the African coast.
Yeah.
And consequently, that's where the word enters the lexicon. And but then it gets picked up and it's used as a cudgel. And it's about time that the damn thing got retired.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you know, maybe 100 years from now, they'll look back on us and say, sure is nice that we got rid of that word 50 years ago. Or maybe they'll still be working on it. Kevin, it's awfully good to hear from you, my friend, and I'm glad to know that you're thriving.
Yes. Oh, one thing I suggest viewing Black Adler, Cavalieros, regarding this topic.
Black Adder, Cavalieros?
Cavalier years. The Cavalier.
Oh, the Black Adder, the Cavalier years. Okay.
Yeah, about Calvinism and Puritanism and all that.
Awesome. I'll look for it.
Okay. Look for it on YouTube.
Okay. Take care, Kevin, and enjoy and be well.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
Kevin calling from Seoul, South Korea, formerly of Brooklyn. It's about 28 minutes before the hour, and my God, everything's blinking. Are you guys all still here? Oh. Hey, welcome to the program.
The N-word, that's a light subject. I'm not touching that.
Yeah, walk away.
But you know what? I think it's a good time. We'll have to talk about this another time because I think you'll find this topic interesting. I want to talk about Anthony Bourdain.
Yes.
You saw this week's episode on Dubai, right?
Yeah, I did. I don't think I've ever seen him more uncomfortable.
You know, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing that Democrats and progressives need to understand. As long as there's that promotion of affluence, of opulence out there, it's a million times what Robin Leach was doing, because it's everywhere. It's on 24/7 TV, so everyone's going to want to obtain that wealth. You see it lavishly in the hip hop culture. You see it in the reality TV shows. So this is why when I tell people who think they're going to look for that people are going to do the right thing and they're going to vote and they're going to collectively come out and vote for the American people, no, because people are addicted to selfishness. Because they see it all the time. It's the biggest drug we have. And, you know, you look at something like Dubai, and that's just basically serfdom come to roost right there. And, you know, that's the thing, Bob. People need to understand this. As long as I don't care if how positive or optimistic you are, as long as we have that TV blaring 24 hours all around the world, that is what is going to be in someone's subconscious. And that's why it's toxic, that's why it's poisonous, and that's why it's destroying the world.
It is. It absolutely is, David. And, you know, one of the reasons that I admire and respect Tony Bourdain so much is that, I mean, you mentioned Robin Leach. You know, he's not going to Dubai and saying, look at the fabulous life of the rich and famous in Dubai. We had a bottle of the most expensive soup in the world. They call it snake urine soup. No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't glamorize it. My personal opinion is that Tony's at his best when he's working with ordinary people with whom he feels a sense of camaraderie and a sense of kinship. And I'm sure he works hard having been at it for this long. But you can kind of tell when he's not comfortable.
For those that didn't see the episode, I guess I could give a brief synopsis that Tony Bourdain was in more than a few scenes was uncomfortable, and he didn't know how to approach no matter what cultural background he was coming from in a city like Dubai that's risen so fast. Remember that comment, Bob, they made where they said, why walk when you can run? I was like, oh, I winced at that. I was like, really?
You too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reaction I get from places. See, Bob, this is the thing. This is the thing that people need to understand, especially Democrats. Whatever you wanted as a kid, you might as well triple that and quadruple that for the kids that are coming out. You know, I'll give you an example. I mean, I see 9-year-olds and 8-year-olds with cell phones. I refuse to get a cell phone. I will never have a cell phone. Bob, I'm the only one in my family that doesn't have a cell phone. My mom says, why don't you get a cell phone? And I say, I don't need one. I have a landline, and this is the tradition that I'm sticking to. I don't want to be told what I have to get.
You like to be able to go places and not have a phone.
Right. And I can take messages down. I have a pencil and a pad. I don't need a BlackBerry. That's the other thing. I don't need a BlackBerry. I understand the technology and all of this, but the more creature comforts that we let in our world, the more and more distractions we get, the more and more sacrifices we make when it comes to politics, when it comes to activism. I mean, listen, you know, I really appreciate what Matt Osborne is saying, but let me ask him this. What do you think is going to happen when all the jobs come back or when people start going back to work for minimum wage or whatever the wage is? You know what's going to happen? The movement's going to dwindle. No one's going to care because the distractions are at a level you've never seen before. That's why it's a wrap. That it's a wrap for most of America, and we need to understand it. And that's why I'm for smashing the networks down. So if anyone's listening and you're near a network, smash it down.
Well, you know, going back to the cell phone business, I can't.
Metaphorically, of course. Metaphorically.
Metaphorically, yes, David, yes.
Yes.
Oh, after a few years, you're learning.
Yeah, I know.
Analogically.
Analogically.
I think I just invented a word.
Okay.
Analogously, there we go.
Just like O'Keefe.
Right. Yeah, let us search for the nadir of our abilities. Jesus.
That's a song, you know. the nadir of our abilities. You know what? You should give that to the drive-by truckers. They would use it, too.
Oh, I think we should just start a band called Nadir.
There you go.
They'd probably think we were foreigners. No, I agree with you on the cell phone stuff in many ways, said the guy who finally broke down and got one for, you know, we've got one because we use it for what we do here.
I understand.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not making excuses. But at any rate, the one thing that I've seen that disturbs me probably more than anything else is text messaging.
Oh, my God.
You know, it is practiced. You remember when, maybe the age difference creates a problem here, David, but when cell phones first came out, you know, you carried them around in a bag on your shoulder, and they were about the size of a purse.
Right. I remember. My dad had one. It was like from the Flintstones, right.
Yeah, I got one when Agnes was pregnant, and it was a problem pregnancy. She was a high-risk pregnancy. So I took it with me wherever I was so that she could call me right then, right there, if something, you know, if the balloon went up. But 90% of the calls that early cell phone users made consisted of one sentence, David.
Mm.
Hey, guess where I'm calling you from? The car!
Yeah.
And I don't know how long that went on, but there's a certain element of that that obtains with text messaging, because I submit that the vast majority of text messaging done in this country is done by people under the age of 25. And I've seen the text messages that pass back and forth, because I am a dutiful and diligent parent, pass back and forth between my son and daughters and their chums. And it makes the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up, David. Because, first of all, you're not as limited as Twitter, but you're limited.
Right.
And it creates these neologisms and abbreviations that, for somebody who doesn't have a full grasp on written English in the first place, can only be deemed to be deleterious. And God, doesn't that make me sound like a grumpy old man? The next thing you know, I'll be telling people to get off my lawn.
Yeah.
But I see that, and I wonder what impact that has on the ability to form cogent, coherent thoughts and express them in written language.
Mm.
Now, I don't know, 25 years from now, David, it may not matter once we've all got the chip in our head and we just think at each other.
Well, I'm actually...
And Verizon sends us our brain bill.
You know what? I'm actually thinking that the Aborigines had the right thing, and we're going to be starting in Bushman, but except that we'll be talking in beatbox noises. Like Timbaland and stuff like that.
If you only knew what that does to me, because my son makes beatbox noises, and I just look at him, and I realize I've turned into my father, because I look at him, and I say, stop that! Yeah.
You know, the thing is that when you... Well, here's the other thing. What I mentioned to you, and I was just joking, but I'm not really joking, people, when I said we could literally have an election where we have two reality TV candidates who are running for president, and then what they will do is, when the presidential candidate wins, you'll have a reality TV show of the years in the White House, and the loser will be the, what did he do with his life?
Well, hasn't that already sort of happened? Didn't NBC give us that day in the life of George W. Bush, and it showed him, you know, getting up and shuffling into the Oval Office in his footy pajamas? Nah, it didn't really, but it was a lot like that, yeah.
It's the start, but you see, here's the other thing, and this is why progressives need to pay attention to this, and liberals. When you have Levi go on the Jimmy Kimmel show, and they're just joking around that he should be voted in as a mayor, I don't like it. I don't like it because it's making him seem harmless. It's making the family seem harmless. It's making everyone who is a right winger seem harmless when they don't look at their policies.
Right. And what do you think the Discovery Channel series about Mussolini's Alaska is going to do for her? It's going to make her seem harmless.
Exactly. It makes her seem harmless. Is it
too much to ask? Should we maybe have a rule that says nobody with a PAC, a political action committee, gets to have a commercial TV show?
I think that's what needs to happen, because what's next? Am I going to see Rumsfeld on Jimmy Kimmel in before he dies or something, talking about the Iraq?
Look at the little love letter to George Shultz that aired or is airing on PBS.
Right.
You know, funded by Pete Peterson, for Christ's sakes.
All of this is culture to insult and trounce on the working class. I was going to send you a story, and see, this is another thing, people. I was saying this before. All of these terms and all of the cultural relevance that the liberals and the progressives that we've made throughout the years is going to be taken. It's going to be stolen. It's revised. They've already used Orwell. Look at Glenn Beck. He uses Orwell's name every week. And the other thing is that they're taking the signs. They're taking the union signs and the union propaganda signs and the union strikes and all of that that was to uplift the workers and use it for the corporations now. Like somehow a working class person is being painted as the villain, the bad guy, the lazy person, the bum. And you see, Bob, this is the problem. Democrats don't get it. That's why I say to these pundits, and that's why I say to all these bloggers and all these people who tell me, no, you don't get it. They're taking everything, all of the history that you... all the cultural terms, everything, all your authors, they're all going to be turned on their back. And they're already doing it all across the radio. They're doing it on Fox TV.
they're doing it in the op-eds. Where do you think the term South Park conservative came from? They're using that. They're getting a hold of the culture, and people don't understand that. And they understand because they're going to be waiting in the wings.
And when you sort of butt that up against the things like the recently divulged Dig conspiracy,
right?
You've got a recipe for something really noxious. You know, for a long time, we in the progressive liberal sphere have sort of rested on our laurels, David, and said, well, you know, they've got TV and they got radio, but, you know, we've got the internet because they can't find their computer's on button. Well, they found it, David.
That's right. And it's like what I was telling you about how Richard Vigories and how they'd already caught up. The gap's already caught up, people. And, you know, talking about Breitbart, why don't you go to his site and see the 5 or 6 portals that he has and all the content he's going? Do you really think, does anybody really think that if somebody gets behind and says, I don't like this guy, he needs to be left alone. Really? Is that how it's going to happen? I didn't want to say this, Bob, but let's look into reality. Ariana Huffington and Andrew Breitbart, personal close friends. You do the math.
You're kidding. No, stop it. Wait, stop.
Yes.
Personal close friends?
Associates. He co-designed Huffington Post. That's one thing I don't understand that what Matt Osborne didn't say. Andrew Breitbart was behind the co-designing of Huffington Post. Look it up. It's in the history.
Jesus Christ.
And here's the other thing. Andrew Breitbart came out. Do you know how he came out of cultural relevance? It was way before. Way, 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 way before. This whole thing with Acorn. I knew he was poisoned the minute I saw him. I'll tell you the moment you saw him. When Bill Maher started having him on the panel. Lots of people don't even remember that. Go look in the history books. Go look in the Bill Maher.
Bill Maher catapulted him to fame, fortune, and stardom the way he did Ann Coulter?
No, he didn't. He just made him. See, Bob, that's the thing. They make him seem harmless. They're not harmless. Jesus Christ, putting these people on the... on the panels, and having them, here's the problem, Bob. I don't mind when someone's there for a week, but when you have them there repeatedly, just like you had Ann Coulter repeatedly, you start to look at them.
Right. Well, it gives them both relevance and credibility, David.
That's right. And it builds the brand. And it's another number to their Rolodex. So that's why I say, when you look at something like Huffington Post, and when you look at someone like Breitbart, remember, there are certain people that Breitbart's not going to go after directly, or he might go after him indirectly, but he'll never come out and totally insult someone.
No, the next Andrew Breitbart total is target is Maxine Waters.
You know, it's funny you say that, because remember I was telling you how the whole indictment cycle was going to be all black candidates this year? All
yep.
Black everything, as Jay-Z might say? Because if you look at Alvin Green, they indicted him today.
No kidding, I missed it.
Yeah, they indicted him today for his pornographic allegations for showing a woman, which is just hilarious to me. I mean, he showed a woman a website, and that's the charge.
Damn, Clarence Thomas showed Anita Hill his Johnson.
You know, that's where we're at, and that's what I.
Does that mean? I mean, is the indictment of Clarence Thomas forthcoming?
You know, Bob, it's...
No, it's not. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Because, you know, Alvin Green is at least nominally a Democrat.
Well, I wanted to...
I thought they were going to indict him for campaigning while black.
I wanted to let other people get a chance to talk and vent. But I did want to have you ask one question for Mr. Bourdain for me, if you could. And that has to do with the fact, and maybe you'll say, yeah, why is that? Bob, have you ever wondered why there hasn't been a DVD season for No Reservations yet?
But there has.
No, I checked on Netflix.
No, I've watched season 1, season 2, season 3. You can watch it online.
Are you sure?
Yes. I mean, I watched the Vegas episode 3 times before I left and didn't get to see any of the cool places you went to.
Because when I go to Netflix and when I went to Amazon, I typed in No Reservations, and I don't get it matched for DVD. I get like a compilation best of DVD. This is what I was.
No, I mean I could do it right now, except it might take us off the air, bandwidth
right.
Being bandwidth. But if you go to Netflix and type in Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations, bang, ding, 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 season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know.
Wow. Well, that's surprising to me because I was actually
You know, I have there are some episodes that I absolutely adored of A Cook's Tour, and
right.
they're harder to find. But I've got favorite episodes of No Reservations. One of them is the Peru episode with him laying on the bed in the hotel room in Cusco with the oxygen being pumped in, and later him sitting in a chair with the oxygen mask actually on, you know, 12,000 feet, can't flip and breathe.
Yeah.
That's a magic one. The episode where he sort of has his this little epiphany, I forget if it was in Malaysia or the Philippines or where, I can't remember. There's this episode where he has this it has a feel of genuineness about it that is present in virtually no other programming. It certainly won't be in Sarah Palin's Alaska, and it's not on Samantha Brown. And, you know, Food Network has poor Bobby Flay just out making a caricature of himself. He's doing it for good money, but, you know, whatever. But there's a genuineness and an inquisitiveness there that, I mean, Andrew Zimmern is interesting to watch.
Right.
Because he too seems genuine, and he seems genuinely decent, but he doesn't have that inquisitive quality that I get from Tony. And
well, Bob, I hope when you talk to him, you get at least like a half hour. I know he'll be a very busy person.
Oh no, I've got him for 30 to 45 minutes.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to that, and I will be tuned into that. And yeah, so have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you later.
Well, you too, David. This has been a dandy. This conversation may go into the David from Maine Hall of Fame archive.
Well. We'll have to talk about the N-word some other time because I have some different opinions on that. So.
Okie doke. You have
right,
a good weekend, David. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. First of all, please tell Agnes to check her email. There's something there for her.
Okie dokie.
Now, second. In case someone needs some ammunition in regards to the Schlesinger issue, tell them to go up to YouTube and type in strange fruit. There is a YouTube video of Billie Holiday singing Strange Fruit. And if somebody can sit there and listen to the lyrics of that song and not understand, they're not worth bothering with.
Well, indeed. Is there any evidence that Doc Meng, as Bart Cup calls her, has ever commented on that? Or
I really doubt it. She doesn't. She probably doesn't. Has no idea that ever went on. Or even if she does. She probably figures, well, they were lawbreakers or something, you know. Yeah. Existing while black. Got a couple goodies for you. Dear old McCain has done another flip-flop.
Oh, what's Grumpy John done now?
Yeah, he's beginning to resemble a fish out of water the way he's flopping around. You know how he signed on for the... repealed the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
Now he's saying, well, let's reconsider that.
Oh, did somebody decide they didn't like it after all?
He's claiming he certainly doesn't support repeal.
Well, the beauty of how that works is he says that to normal people, and he'll show up at a teabagger rally day after tomorrow and says, repeal it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nah, then, wah, wah.
Yeah, he's beginning to remind me of Charlie Brown's mother or father. You know.
Oh, Miss Othmar, the second grade teacher? Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the dear Laura Engel. That woman is worth votes just every time she opens her. Yeah.
Oh, Sharon Angle?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if you meant Laura Ingraham or Sharon Angle. So.
Sharon Angle.
Because they're both delightfully insane right-wingers.
Well, that's true. But Sharon, oh, my God.
Oh, Sharon, who has now declared that the United Nations is unconstitutional?
Unconstitutional. And then she's also claiming that we should model Social Security after the Chilean dictatorships, which means privatize it. This woman is just... I can't help thinking when she was little, somebody sprayed her real good with Raid.
You know, I'd like to think so, but the reality is, Susan, that is exactly how she and others like her are, and they don't have the excuse of having it done to them. They are dyed-in-the-wool, born bigots, racists, fear-mongers, and hate-mongers. Oh, by the way, backing up real quick to Laura Schlesinger for a minute. Schlesinger. Since August the 12th, 2010, CNN has done 5 segments on her. MSNBC has done 2.
True. And Fox has done none.
Right.
We know.
I'm sorry. What did we say had done none? Oh, yeah, Radio Rwanda.
Radio Rwanda. You know, when you first came on here, you mentioned the applause.
Yeah, that you know, okay. when you hear a wingnut doing what wingnuts do, it ain't particularly shocking, Susan. It's when you hear the people in the audience clapping their fool heads off that you go, oh, we're screwed. Because the proper response to that kind of insanity is to get a hook and grab them by the neck and pull them off the stage or run them out of town on a rail.
Yeah. You know what that whole response brought to my mind?
What's that?
You came up with the applause from that one right-winger. I came up with the applause from the suburb in Dallas, led by the children in the suburb of that Dallas in 1963 when it was announced that John Kennedy had been murdered. Strange how your mind works sometimes.
No, it is. It is indeed.
Here's 2 little pieces of information that might brighten up your day.
Okie doke.
Remember Hal Turner?
Yes.
Yeah, he's the dude that was said these judges need to be killed.
Right.
Well, they brought him in on federal charges and... he gonna go to jail.
He did the perp walk?
Oh, he didn't just do the perp walk, honey. They came down with a guilty verdict.
Lovely.
Which just warms the cockles of my fat little heart. I just love it. It's about time somebody...
It is about time somebody did. But Susan, I will offer you my cynical viewpoint, and that is that while it's about time that somebody did, the entire right wing structure will say, "Well, he was crazy. We're not like that."
Well, of course they will.
The guy who needs indicting is Glenn Beck.
Exactly.
Glenn Beck should be indicted for accessory before the fact.
Incitement.
To the crime committed by that goober. Who went to shoot up the Tides Foundation.
Exactly. Not to mention the guy who went out and shot those people.
Because, see, there's a legal conundrum that happens here, because I am sure that ultimately the guy who was headed for the Tides Foundation and got into the shooting spree with the police, I'm sure that he will ultimately be convicted. And his conviction will be an indication of the fact that he was sane. So therefore, when people argue on Glenn Beck's behalf that, well, you know, you can't predict what some nut job's gonna do.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work, because he's already been judged sane enough to be tried and convicted. And that means, because, you see, insanity really does serve as a brick wall in the process of causation, legally speaking. And if the guy had been insane, you, boom, brick wall, and you, anything before it or after, no, he's crazy. He's just doing a crazy person doing crazy things.
Uh-huh.
But these guys, you know, the guy who shot up the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation, dude was not adjudged insane. He was stone cold sane when he did it. And it's important to note that that sanity makes it possible to look backwards at why he did it and who made him do it. But we don't have a prosecutorial structure with enough guts, enough nerve to pursue convictions against the Michael Wieners and the Sean Hannitys and the Bill O'Reillys and lately the Glenn Becks.
Exactly.
There's not a single one of them that should not be wearing a blaze orange jumpsuit with little matching plastic shower shoes.
Yeah, I agree. I think they should be. It infuriates me. Yeah, that's one of my buttons. The same way I get infuriated when the right wing goes off on their anti-Muslim rant thingies, because they very carefully don't bother to mention the 100-plus Muslims who died in those buildings and on those jets, and they just... I turn bright red.
I know. I know. Susan, good hearing from you, dear. You have a wonderful weekend, okay?
One more little piece of news.
Yes?
Good news. If you're... Well, it's nice news, I should say. I don't know if it's good news. Unless you're... No. Stephanie Miller came out of the closet today.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. And she's very proud of herself, and I'm very proud of her, and I think she's just so cool.
You know what? Anybody who comes out of the closet, I am proud for and proud of. Because just to get out of anything that is a semblance of living a lie or being anything short of who you are, is a crime not against society, but the highest sort of sin. It's a sin against yourself.
Yeah, because of the lie you have to live.
Now, with that having been said, we will engage in tonight's moment of shallowness. I heard the news and went, damn! Because, you know, I figured when Agnes finally wises up and throws me out, I figured I'd take a run at Stephanie, but no, she's not on the team anymore. Rats.
Well, you know that guy that calls into her program, Kevin from Washington D.C.
I honestly can't say I do, because I don't get to listen to her.
Oh, you poor thing. It's up on. You can get the podcast up on my Rose.
I know, but I don't have a. My day does not admit time.
Oh, well, there is that. Anyway, the one person that's probably relieved is Keith Olbermann, because now he knows that the prospective husband list was a joke. He doesn't have.
Or maybe it's the fact that he never called and she finally said, well, I mean, because, you know, we did have that clip there from who was it, Elizabeth Hasselbeck, said, well, you know, women just give up. They give up on heterosexuality, and the next thing you know, they're all lesbian and stuff. Maybe that happened to Stephanie with Keith.
Oh, I'll email that to her. She might get a giggle out of that.
And I never even made the list. Damn.
You poor baby. Have a
first one of you that tells on me to Agnes, I'll know.
Well, guess
what? No, it's all a joke. I'm insanely enthralled to redheads, so, you know, it's hopeless.
Yes, I know. You are disgustingly in love with your wife, and I think it is just wonderful. Besides that, I like Davis.
Well, I wasn't leaving her. I was just waiting for her to wise up and throw me out.
Well, you never know. That might actually come along.
Stop. It's my worst nightmare. Susan, take care, dear.
Behave yourself.
I'm going to try.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward on this Friday on the front porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Pat.
Hey, Pat. What's up? Long time no talk to you. How you doing?
Yeah. Well, last time was right after the Truckers show. I was Annie and the boys are down the Cape, and they've been down all week, and I finally, you know, was spurred to call because as I was eating dinner in front of the TV, I was flipping around and stopped on C-SPAN, and there was Don Blankenswein.
Are they still rerunning him?
Yeah, they are. And so I said, oh, this is a sign. I've got to call.
God, C-SPAN's got more reruns of Don Blankenship than Disney does of Miley Cyrus.
Yeah. Yep. But, I was calling just, I was going to make a funding pitch for you and for,
Bless your heart.
For Ken Heckler as well. I wasn't able to give much to Ken, but I did my, you know, what I could spare. And I think you're absolutely right as far as this being probably the most important, definitely the most important primary this season.
Oh, I'd say, you know, and just to expand upon that, Pat, I think it's more important than the Harry Reid race.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I don't. Has there been any coverage outside of West Virginia?
Next to none. The minute that Ken announced, there was a little professional hatchet job done, where the word went out that he was a crank, that he was a crazy old coot, he was 95 years old, nothing to pay attention here. This is a joke. And of course, people with no ability to look past the source of the information. Oh, okay, never mind.
I do my best on Twitter for everything that Jeff Biggers puts up at Huffington Post, and so I try to get the word out. And I've been pushing the Rise Up
Appalachia Rising.
Yeah, Appalachia Rising. I've been pushing that as well. If there was any way that I could afford to get down there, I would be there in a second. Annie asked me, we were having a conversation about how things were going in the country in general, and she asked me, you know, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to go to Washington, D.C. on the 25th of September and stay through the 27th, and I want to take part in this. And she's like, well, we can't do that. Yeah, I know. But you asked me what I want to do.
But you know what? You're spreading the word, Pat, and that goes around the world.
Yeah.
And so don't sell yourself short by any stretch of the imagination.
And I feel bad. I've been, you know, things have been really tight around here, and I've been still contributing, but it's not what I, you know, up to where I normally would try to do for the horn, and I think, you know, you adding that extra $500 to the goal is a good thing, and it's well deserved for Ben. I think, you know, I've been giving, ever since I started downloading the horn, I've been giving Ben a small monthly contribution on my own, it's only like $3 a month, but you know, it's every month he gets it, and it's automatic. And I, you know, I've had a couple of emails back and forth with Ben apologizing about the small amount, and he's, you know, he's happy to get it, you know.
Oh, he is, and you know, he won't put on a hard sell. He'll put a little thermometer up on the website once in a while and say, hey, we need help. But the fact of the matter is, none of this happens without Ben. And while it's hard for us to meet our monthly goal as it stands, Patrick, it's long overdue. I should have included Ben when I initially set the goal.
Yeah. Well, and there was a while back where maybe 6 months ago, where he had a fundraiser going, and he said that, you know, one out of every $5 would go to the horn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, I don't know. We really need to, you know, give our $5 or $10 to the horn, you know, help Ben out as well if you can. And definitely this month, if you got an extra $5 hanging around, send it to Ken Heckler. He needs the help, and we really do need to get, you know, at least get Ken's message out there and make Governor Cole answer to some of the stuff, you know.
I have reason to believe, and I'm not going to go further than that, but I have reason to believe that a guest op-ed that I submitted to the Charleston Gazette will be published in the next week or so, having to do with asking Joe Manchin to account for himself, straight up.
Yeah. And isn't he's pro-life as well, right? I mean,
right. Yeah, oh, yeah, he's pro-life.
He's totally...
I mean, the West Virginians for life, they can't open a package of peanut butter and crackers without Joe being there to let me break cracker with you.
Well, and how you know, this is a kind of stupid rhetorical question, but if you're pro-life, how can you, you know, stomach the 22,000 plus deaths a year from burning and extracting the coal?
Well, the quick, easy, sleazy, and dirty answer is that those are lives that already exist. By being pro-life, Joe is far more interested in fetuses.
Right.
He's not pro-life. He's pro-fetus.
Absolutely.
But there's even a problem there, Patrick, because there are unborn generations of West Virginians to whom he has to account for the fact that he doesn't give a damn about them.
Yeah.
Because if he did, just as a for instance, if he did, West Virginia's so-called renewable energy portfolio would not include burning tires as renewable energy.
Wow.
I mean, that's like including burning sofas at West Virginia University as renewable energy.
No kidding. And, you know, we went to a book sale at our library a few months back, and copy of some essays of Mark Twain, and I finally got to crack it open. This is a literary essays of him, so it's critiques of books and stuff that he wrote. And the first one is the Defense of Harriet Shelley. It's about a biography of Percy Bysshe Shelley, and I guess in the the biography is written very flowery and very flattering towards Percy Bysshe Shelley, and Harriet was his first wife, I guess. And she apparently, according to the biographer, deserved to be left. But there's a quick little quote I want to read. And I think it really points to the problem we have with our for-profit media today. And even though he's talking about, you know, a flowery biography, he's talking about putting the facts of Percy Bysshe Shelley's life out versus, you know, what this guy did. And yet, so here it goes. Yet it believes it can reason and is always trying. It is not content to leave a mountain of facts standing in the clear sunshine where the simplest reader can perceive its form, its details, and its relations to the rest of the landscape, but thinks it must help him examine it and understand it. So its drifting mind settles upon it with that intent, but always with one and the same result. There is a change in the temperature, and the mountain is hidden fog. Every time it sets up a premise and starts to reason from it, there is a surprise in store for the reader. It is strangely near... God. You know, I'm sitting outside because I was enjoying a cigar.
Cigar. I knew it. I knew it.
I had a Tres Indios Maduro.
Oh, I love those. I love those.
Yeah.
Cheap sticks that are really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's strangely nearsighted, cross-eyed, and purblind. Sometimes when a mastodon walks across the field of its field of vision, it takes it for a rat. At other times, it does not see it at all. So I just, it's another.
If you go off down the Twain path, Pat, you'll never be the same. There's a paperback book you can get in the classic, the classic department of any decent bookstore. It's a thick paperback called it purports to be the complete works of Mark Twain. Of course, it's not. But that alone, you'll hurt yourself within the first 100 pages.
Yeah.
And there are some places where you just go so wild that there's no help for it.
Yeah.
But I love that Victorian writing style under which he hides these neat little stilettos that go into his victim. Before the victim even knows that the flesh has been nicked.
Right.
And what you just read is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. No, I apologize, I didn't do it justice, but, I think people...
It occasionally sees a mastodon crossing its path and goes for a ride. Other times it doesn't see the mastodon at all.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
There's a reason he's one of my very few heroes.
Oh, absolutely. Did you ever see the claymation? Has to do with Mark Twain. It was an early claymation. I can't remember the name of it. But he goes down into hell and visits the devil, and he's got these two kids on a balloon. They're riding around.
Oh gosh, no! I'd love to see that.
I know you can get that on Netflix.
So okay, I'll try to pull together an appropriate string of keywords and make it come up. Just Mark Twain claymation.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. You know what? I can go back through my history and I'll find it and I'll send an email to you. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Patrick, enjoy the cigar. I think you've inspired me. Oh, darn. Well, you've inspired me. Maybe when the show's over, with it being such a lovely evening, I'll go out and sit in my lawn chair with a nice stick and just sort of while away an hour or so.
And if it's a clear night down there, you might see some shooting stars
it's been a clear day, and I'm hoping it stays a clear night. And he's got to get up awfully early. I was going to say I'll keep Ferg up and let him see him, but he's going to have a long day tomorrow. Instead, since he's injured and can't play ball, he has been cross posted, as it were, into managerial duties, and it's proving to be it's proving to be every bit as grueling as anything going out on the field. And he's highly frustrated. Dad, I don't want to do this. I said, well, you know what? You're going to learn a lot more about the game doing this, and be a lot more prepared for next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, have a wonderful
evening. Everybody, chip in. We got $2,500 to meet this month, and we're going to do it.
Yeah, if we were at $1,250 by Monday, it would be huge.
Yeah.
And we're closing in on around $700 or so.
Well, I'm glad I got to talk to you, Bob, and you guys have a great weekend. And
well, you too, and
my
give
the whole Horn family.
And to Annie and the kids, our greetings and fondest good wishes.
All righty.
Take care, Patrick.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
It's Patrick calling from Massachusetts. And let's see if anybody still wants to play. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, I just sent you an email, and I'll just share it on the air. Pursuant to what Susan, who you mentioned.
Strange fruit, yeah.
Southern trees bearing strange fruit. Well, watch the films. Number one is the film Lady Sings the Blues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was who stars in that?
Boss and Billy Dee Williams.
Okay.
And it's the Billie Holiday story.
Right.
About what happened to her, and when she was traveling with, I think it was Harry James. Basically, due to pressures and the tensions, unfortunately, got a distance back and eventually ended up without being able to have a cabaret license and dying at a very early age.
Didn't she die handcuffed to a hospital bed?
I don't know how she died, but the only place where she could get any work was in Provincetown, and that was with the assistance of Tennessee Williams and people like that. Because in New York, she couldn't sing because she had been convicted of,
crime of moral turpitude.
Well, a felony, a drug conviction, because she unfortunately just became addicted and couldn't get off the stuff. And it was just a real tragic thing. And, of course, the other is the made-for-TV film, The Life of Josephine Baker. And if ever there is a movie that will move even the most hardened heart, that is one of them. I mean, consider what she came from, what she did. And as I told you before, she couldn't have children of her own. And she was able to, after serving in World War II, singing for our troops and things of that nature, moved back to France. And by the way, she was there when the Germans entered France. And can you imagine being in her house and having the SS knocking on your door?
I'd rather not.
It happened to her. And she was able to escape to North Africa with the aid of the French resistance and sing for our troops, and then went back to France, and she adopted 13 children, calling them her Rainbow Tribe, each child being from a different part of the world. And, of course, that couldn't last forever because the money ran out, and she died in virtual penury, being, at the end, rescued only by Princess Grace of Monaco. And, and these are just only two of black women that were taken advantage of and horribly mistreated. And Dorothy Dandridge. Dorothy Dandridge would not succumb to the Hollywood machine of being made to play domestic blacks and things of that nature. And they ground her up, too.
And try for what? For what?
For not wanting or being coerced into playing a domestic black.
For not being willing to play into the game.
Exactly. The Hollywood machine just ground her right up, and people like Walter Winchell were right in there with the efforts to denigrate and destroy these women. It was just really horrible. I mean, it just goes back, and it's sickening. And to end what I have to say, Laura, whatever her name is a national disgrace.
If we took seriously, Jim, the concept of public airwaves maintained for the benefit of the public, the woman would never be allowed behind a microphone again. And I ask, and I'm not being smart aleck when I ask it, Jim, given the fact that, and I asked it earlier, given the fact that we have an arbitrary and capricious list of words that one may not say on the public airwaves, doesn't her little diatribe, her little tirade, doesn't that call for a reexamination of that list? Isn't the use of the N-word 11 times in the space of 5 minutes, isn't that enough? Shouldn't that be enough impetus to call upon the FCC to reexamine which is more obscene, that word or the Anglo-Saxonism used to describe the physical act of intimacy?
Yes, I agree with you totally. But even before she pulled this thing with the N-word, I've seen her on so many other programs. And I just wondered, who is this woman? And there she is clutching at the Star of David pendant. You seen that?
Yeah, I'm surprised she didn't, instead of the N-word, I'm surprised she didn't use schwarze.
Or kike.
Well, no, nobody would, she would not tolerate that word being used against her, nor should she. But she feels that place of special privilege where she can say it, where she can say a vile and vicious racial epithet, and perceive no repercussions. And again, let me reiterate what I said last night, Jim. Her sense of regret did not come from her moral center. It came from her commercial center.
Well, you know, people like Laura Schlesinger and Sarah Palin and some of the others, what's her name, Lynn Cheney?
Yeah.
They can be described by a word that's only used in kennels.
And canine breeding programs.
Got it.
Indeed. Jim, have a great weekend, my friend.
You too, sir.
All right, take care.
Good night.
Bye now. That's Jim. And Jim never seldom sees a fastball hanging out of the plate that he doesn't put out of the park. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, you know, I wasn't going to call because I'm so burnt out and so sick of it all, but because it's Shallow Friday, Stephanie Miller, what?
Donna.
I'm sorry. When I heard that, I'm like, oh, I missed that.
Me too.
I was like, are you serious? Anyway, because I don't listen to her too much anymore. I don't really have time, but I used to. I mean, she would bend over talking about dudes. So it's quite interesting. I guess she couldn't take it no more.
Well, I still say it's the Elizabeth Hasselbeck theory coming true.
Oh, that, you mean, is she the one that talked about how, because men are acting wrong, so women just say to hell with it?
Yeah, you know, the men just run off and they won't commit. And, you know, after a while, women just get tired of it and start turning into lesbians.
Oh, well, see, yeah, that makes sense. That must be it. Listen, and these people have a platform. That's what's killing me. That dumb bitch, she needs to shut the hell up. Man, that's incredible. But anyway.
Yeah, you mean Elizabeth Hasselbeck does.
Yes. She's forever.
Yeah, she's a walking argument for tennis balls and duct tape.
Yeah, her foot lives up in the mouth. It's incredible. I mean, really, it's nonstop with that one. But I'm sorry. I can't get that worked up about Dr. Laura. She's just some cracker that forgot she wasn't at home and lost her.
Oh! Oh!
She just did what to come next.
And that may be the end of the Dr. Laura discussion. Just another cracker forgot she wasn't home.
Because that's what happens to these racists, you know. Then they just sort of lose it. Because I listened to her, I said, oh, shit, this bitch is tasting too good to her. She really went overboard, right? And I was like, oh, no, another white person.
Well, I got to admit, Sandra, I had a moment of, cynicism, incredulity. Really. I mean, tell me. Do you really think that there is a single black person left in America who thinks that Dr. Laura is going to give her reasonable, rational advice on how to deal with her white husband's racism? Really, that person? Because some of this smelled, and I might as well say it before the wing nuts start doing it. Some of this smelled a little bit.
Well, yeah.
Or was the poor victim caller really that lost?
No. See, that's the thing. I was also thinking, of course, I listened to it. I said, well, what's up with the caller? You and me both. I'm like, oh, no. All this is just too, but it's too funny because that old hag, you know, I don't know. I'm sorry. It's just sort of, that's all that comes to mind. It's just sort of, white people who just sort of forget where the hell they are. What year it is.
Stop taking the Aricept. You know, the Alzheimer's came back. She was behind the microphone when it happened. No, I get it.
And also, the justifications are so lame, again, you know, well, they use it, so why can't we? It's like, really? Are you serious? You know what I mean? I'm like, you know, I look, I see Obama is, and I look, and I'm like, you know, this thing, it just continues, like, nonstop. And, you know, as a black person, at this point, you know, I'm just laughing. I'm like, damn, wow. So that's why I sent you that Paul Mooney, because...
Yeah, I've got it. I actually queued it up. You said 1630 or so?
Yeah, because that fool is, you know, it's just hilarious. And anyway, because...
Well, you do know, by the way, and this is sort of ancillary, but that's, well, silly is part of the word, so I'll use it. You know President Obama's going down to the Gulf Coast again, right? Well, those crackers who forgot they're not home, World Nut Daily, they've already bought the billboard to welcome him. Where's the birth certificate?
You know, and that's what I'm saying. See, it's just incredible. I mean, you know, Obama could torture some poor Arab himself at this point, and they still would be talking about a birth certificate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if Barack Obama came out and said, I agree, it's totally wrong, we won't build that Muslim YMCA in the state of New York, they'd say,
right.
Well, see, he's trying to show us that he's tough on his people.
Well, no, but he already called himself a mongrel. No one really touched on that too much, and I was like, oh, no. I'm still whirling over that one.
You know, it was funny. It was funny when Bill Murray did it in Stripes. Who are we? We're mutts. Not so much. No.
It was just like, huh? And so, you know, I hear that from him, then I flash on Sherrod, and I'm like, yeah, you was brought up by some white people. That's for sure. What? You know? So, like I said, I'm sort of laying off of Obama. I just think, damn, it's kind of a bit of a nightmare, so.
Well, and in many ways, just sort of sad, isn't it?
Well, it's sad for us because we're in such dire straits, but it's also really disturbing for him. I can only imagine. I mean, I can't even imagine what. Yeah, it seems really kind of.
Can you imagine every time you proofread a speech, and you're in his skin? Every time you proofread a speech, somewhere along the way, inside the body of the speech, you look down and you go, "Yeah, they're going to call me a Muslim for this one." And that's your world. That's your day.
Yeah, and then you know the sort of because it's funny to.
I mean, hasn't he killed enough brown people for them?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Well, no, he ain't moved an inch on. I mean, the sort of black community is just sort of imploding right before our eyes, and this man ain't gonna lift a finger. That's what's like really telling right now, because I'm like, black people falling at every place. That madness in Atlanta, yeah, that burnt my eyes out. Did you see that?
Yes.
What? No, you know, and the thing is, this stuff is on. It makes the news for about a second now. Have you noticed how?
I looked at that photograph, Sandra.
Everything's
It's Pakistan.
Yeah, everything's fine, and they just move on to the next. I mean, it's like rapid fire misery, and no one is making any attempts to address it. At all. I mean, I sent you that email about what Chicago did. Did you?
Yeah, I did.
And not to say that that's any better. In fact, it's quite horrific, the number.
But it's at least an attempt. No, the numbers are staggering.
I was like, sort of jaw drop with the numbers there, because that really freaked me out. And the numbers of these people who showed up to just get on a list.
The other number that laid me low was this line. Chicago just opened their waiting list for public housing in July, and this is the part that slayed me, the first time they've done so in 10 years.
And how about that? Wasn't it like like 250,000. I mean,
215,000 Chicagoans applied for, this is basically Section 8 housing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, whatever the public housing is called. But the thing is...
But here, well, no, okay, I'm sorry. Here's the fun part of that lottery. There were 215,000 applications for 40,000 slots. That means there's 80,000 people that are screwed.
Well, the thing is that what this sort of tells me is it's as bad as, I don't want to say the Depression era, but akin to it, except of this whole everything is sort of niched out and it can be hidden very well, you know, it's just hidden. Because, you know, for example, 19 million foreclosed homes. I mean, those numbers, the numbers, Bob, are just sort of, they're just staggering, and it's disgusting that people would just let those numbers roll over them, which is what
but the right. Well, it is what's happening, Sandra. You're absolutely correct. But there's a point at which you reach a level of human cognitive disconnect, I suspect. We can't conceptualize, except by virtue of numbers on a blackboard, 19 million of anything.
Well, yeah, you know, and...
I mean, is there a better way of expressing it? You know, can we use it in terms of, you know, 100 people vying for 5 slots? Because we can get our minds around that.
Well, yeah, but the thing that keeps popping up, though, Bob, is like every time these stories come up, you hear about, oh, some job that's paying $13 an hour. You're like, mm-hmm. And then you see it's like 25,000 people trying to apply. And you're just like, this is some real...
well, what's the difference between that and competing for a seat in a lifeboat off the Titanic?
Exactly, and it's just really brother can you spare a dime? I mean, I'm starting to think that the numbers, they've been sort of rigged over the years, since the Reagan years, the different economic numbers. So it's reasonable for us to think that the unemployment numbers are just like they were in the 30s. If you look at the overall economy and how brittle it really is, I think that it's just hollowed out, you know?
I would say that the primary difference between the Great Depression and this thing that we, you know, we're not going to call it a depression or anything, right? We can't do that. The biggest difference is that mass media was in its absolute neonatal infancy at the time of the last one. And so the American people, with nothing to turn their attention away, save for movies that they couldn't afford, were forced to confront the reality around them. It's happening again this time, but as I've said before, and I know it's very cynical, the cable is still on. And as long as the cable's on, we'll pretend that there's something anomalous about 19 million foreclosures, or that it's you know, just a, well, you know, that's just how it, it's coincidental that 40,000 people will get, only 40,000 slots will come out of 215,000 applications in Chicago.
I mean, you know, you look at, I don't even call it the Fed anymore, Bob. I just call it the central bank, because I think the Fed gives it some other connotation that it don't deserve.
Right.
The central bank. And the central bank's main priority is supposed to be low unemployment. And they have completely bailed. And it's just sort of stunning to watch. And, I mean, what really has to happen, they need to double the stimulus. I mean, because there ain't no coming back from this if they just sort of leave it like they're trying to, because there's no jobs to recover, you know?
And you know what I mentioned the other night in a conversation we had, Sandra, these releases, these statements, these letters
that I keep seeing from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. And that's what frustrates me quite possibly more than anything else, because if this was happening and there was no solution, if this was happening and everybody was out there scratching their heads and, you know, licking their pencils and running the numbers and none of the numbers would add up and there's just no way out of this, if that was the case, then you know what? We'd have to look at ourselves and say, well, we got to do something different. But the fact of the matter is, when I look at stuff from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, I know the answer's out there, and they're presenting it. But it goes back to that conversation we've had about the fact that national manufacturing policy is persona non grata inside the White House, and there are people at the White House who look at people like Bob Borisage like we used to look at Dick Cheney, like he was some sort of vampire.
Well, just these numbers, 81% of the job creation are like service jobs. Come on. You know, and you don't have to be an economist to sort of, figure out when you see those sort of numbers what's going on. And the economy is going back into recession, right? Remember we discussed this?
Yes.
Well, it actually is happening. And I don't hear nothing. I hear nothing. No plan. I don't know what they think is going to happen because 50,000 people a day are losing their final unemployment check. That's the number right there per day.
And alongside that, Ron in Raleigh points out remember, the federal government has not built a unit of public housing since Ronald Reagan was in office, instead using vouchers to landlords. Just like school vouchers, this system only works if someone wants to give you a slot in school or a place to live.
And keep remembering all that inventory of houses in that sort of nether limbo of not being foreclosed because the banks don't want to recognize that loss hell that we're in. And as they slowly reveal that, the asset value will keep dropping.
See, while I was out in Las Vegas, I had one of those little wake-up come-to-Jesus moments, Sandra.
Every other day at this point.
Yeah, but I got driven. I got taken out into a nice middle-class neighborhood in Vegas.
Oh, boy, that must have been interesting.
Well, you know, once you get away from the glitz and glam and chicanery of the strip, it's just a city in the desert. And here's these streets with these three-bedroom ranch-style houses built on sand.
Right.
And they're so close together that you could stick a yardstick out one window and touch the next house. And my guide was telling me, these used to be $75,000 homes, and then but then she started saying, "But look at that one, and look at that one, and look at that one, and look at that one," and they were all empty, Sandra.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, what are they going for now?" She said, "Oh, you know, these things will go for $20,000." But nobody has the $20,000, and the economy in Vegas is absolutely ripped to shreds.
Oh yeah, and you know, the sort of. This tug of war between inflation and deflation, I mean, it is such a joke because all those things are at play. But the biggest problem is, once again, the market, the mark to magic. You know, that whole thing where the assets aren't given any real value.
Where everything is done by fiat?
Well, it's just a joke because, you know, people wonder why there's no movement in the economy, and trust me, it's because these assets are being hidden, they're being lied about, they're not real, and if you're an investor, which, of course, you know, I'm not, you're not trusting none of this. All of it's a joke. But we're suffering so badly behind the machinations, and the policymakers are nowhere to be found. So, I mean, I really don't know. I didn't mean for this conversation to go this way because I really was calling about the Stephanie Miller thing. And my other thing was the Tiger Woods. What happened to that dude?
Oh, did I miss something? did he come unglued?
Oh, he's just, you know, terrible. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen the second round, but, you know, they're like, I read.
Did he spend the first round playing in the weeds?
Yeah, I don't know, I haven't really followed it because I was still laughing at how he fell apart last week. But what's interesting is in the Financial Times, there's this whole article about, oh, what is the golf world going to do? You know, they don't know how they're going to move forward if this freak has come undone.
You know, it'll be a little bit like when Magic and Larry finally walked away. How long? I mean, because it took until LeBron came along to have Magic, Larry, Michael, and then from Michael to LeBron is this vast empty space in the NBA.
Oh, it was terrible. And I mean, Michael was just there alone for a minute. You're right about that. And what we have now, though, is just people grouping up. It's not even, it's gross. You got the Magic. Yeah, the NBA, I don't know. I don't hold out.
It's that plus a million times worse for the PGA because they put, they put on Tiger's shoulders every person, every non-checkered pants, non-country club person in the country who had a passing interest in golf. You know, Tiger was carrying them.
Oh, exactly, and that's what the whole article in the Financial Times was really talking about, the numbers, and, you know, that's what, you know, I mean, I guess that's why he was worth $1 billion, because he supported the whole enchilada on that one. But anyway.
Well, now I've got to make sure and just check in on the PGA Championship this weekend, because I got to tell you, it's mean of me. But there's something beautiful about watching, anybody who's ever played golf says you don't say it. But I haven't played golf in so long that I can. There would be something glorious in watching Tiger get a case of the shanks.
It's just the whole thing is so so decadent and disgusting. It's just kind of fitting that it's going this way as far as I'm concerned. And one more thing before I let you go. I saw some really frightening photos of Russia's wedding where he's standing oh so close to Elton John.
No.
Maybe that's the ticket. You know the rumors about Rush.
Oh, well, they're more than rumors as far as I know. I mean,
they
go so far as to, I believe, include a well-hidden conviction.
Oh, well. Listen, so anyway, yeah, the pictures of him and Elton are just...
Oh, must have email with link, Sandra.
Okay, I'll send that to you because I was like, dear God, you know, they look so. It was just incredible. Yeah, I'll send that along to you because it was just killing me. I thought, oh, no.
So Stephanie Miller's out of the closet and Rush is still in it.
Exactly, but I don't know. So maybe Elton did a little bit more for that $1 million than thing.
Oh, now, I'm going to get email.
Okay, listen, have a good weekend.
See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, my mind can't take it. No, not Rush Limbaugh. No, not with Elton John. No. Just no. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, this is Andy.
Andy, what's up?
Redwood City.
It's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard you mentioned Arianna Huffington in regards to one of your conversations.
Yeah, that was David, yeah.
Right, David mentioned it. With regards to the Breitbart dude, I guess?
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Arianna Huffington, watch that, too. She's an interesting character because, of course, she was on the right wing a few years ago, and then she changed her stripes. But interesting thing is she goes on left, right, and center. I don't know if you ever listened to that show, but it's kind of interesting. And she's one of the commentators they kind of juxtapose her against Robert Scheer and Tony, what's his name, from the Washington Times.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
He's a real right-winger. Real
Blankley?
Exactly. Tony Blankley, right. He's so far gone. He's off the cliff. He's right at Attila the Hun, for God's sakes. Anyway, they put her up against those guys. And they had a conversation about Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina, you know, all the money they're throwing at campaigns.
Right.
And she actually had no problem with that. She had no problem because, of course, her husband tried to run for Senate in California.
Yeah, see, it's been so long now, Andy, that many people have forgotten that Ariana's entree into the world of celebrity political commentary came when she was placed opposite Al Franken in an early show back in what, the mid 90s, called Strange Bedfellows, and she was the conservative.
Wow. I remember her with, I think, Charles Grogan, too. She used to be on the cable networks at one time. She was always there. And she was always the conservative then, too. But for somebody that runs the Huffington Post and to come out and go with unlimited money, that's pretty, I think that's pretty out there, for sure. She definitely, she's definitely an elitist, and definitely money talks with her. And she has no problem with it. But I thought that was pretty strange. Another comment I want to make, too, I heard you talking the other day, and you were talking about not voting for Nick Rahal. That's your Democratic rep?
Yeah.
And I agree with you 100%, man. I mean, this is a Richard Viguerie thing. The only way you get rid of these guys is they got to lose. I mean, at least get somebody else in there to run. But these guys who are entrenched get so strong, the only way to knock them out is they got to lose somehow in the hope you can get a progressive to give it a shot. You know, like you have with the guy running against Manchin.
Yeah.
And hope for the best with that 95-year-old.
I would vote for Ken Heckler if he was 105.
Right.
Just because, you know, I believe in voting my conscience.
Right.
And I believe in voting. Look, I mean, statistically speaking, this was suggested to me, and I went and did some digging around. If you're in good health at 95, making it to 98 is a pretty good shot.
Absolutely. The statistics are there. Living one more year at an older age is very high. Once you get past certain thresholds. I don't know, though, about in the mid-90s might be kind of a stretch, but heck, it's better than Manchin any way you cut it.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. I've directly contacted, you know, and again, let's be clear about something. I don't work for the Heckler campaign. I'm not even volunteering with the Heckler campaign. I'm doing all of this as sort of a free agent.
Right.
And I've made contact with some national liberal and progressive organizations, and you know, thanks but no thanks. You know, we're already stretched too thin. That was the quote that was given me. Won't say by who. And, you know, that just blows my mind. Maybe I'm the unrealist here. But you know what? 61% of the people in this state oppose mountaintop removal.
Wow.
And yet it's still going on.
If you drove through the state or you hear the national news media, you wouldn't get that impression at all.
No. No, and frankly, the coal industry, if the coal industry thought that they could get better numbers, they'd be doing the polling. They've got the money. But they don't dare, Andy. They don't dare.
Right.
And so, consequently, we just sort of the toddle along. You know, it's always been miserable. It's always going to be miserable. Miserable is our lot. But the fact of the matter is, if there was some just a modicum of media money in Mr. Heckler's campaign, This you know, this is the opportunity. This is not a long campaign season. Ad buys right now would be brilliant and could literally turn the tide of the election.
Right. Unfortunately,
but
what you get is these billboards for clean coal.
Yeah.
I saw them all over the place as I was driving through the Alleghenies.
Sickening, aren't they?
Green coal. God, drive me friggin' nuts. What an oxy friggin' moron.
Yeah, right. Well, did you see the line underneath it? Clean carbon neutral coal? and again, I'd just love to see one of those in Spanish because it would have to say carbon neutral carbon.
Right.
And then it becomes a little bit more, you know, obvious.
Right.
Oh, by the way, Ron in Raleigh says, tell Andy I'm tired of people insulting Attila. He was a Hun. He was a Hun, not a Republican. His name should not be besmirched in such a cavalier fashion.
He was actually good to his people. They shared the booty.
Right. Yeah, we can't say that about them. I mean, you know, they're not.
They don't share anything.
The Republicans aren't even going to share it with their own, let alone us.
Right. It's the me generation.
It's all about me. Republican time. Yeah, that was too bad. Your last caller was kind of a, I mean, she's saying the truth, no doubt about it. But, man, until we turn around this free trade and we start manufacturing here again and we start protecting our industries and entrepreneurs here, God, we're just not going to create the jobs to get.
And, you know, there's no better example, Andy, than the green sector, wind turbines, solar panels, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Until American industry run by American companies is building these things, because American industry run by American ownership building these things could turn the economy around in a couple of years. But, you know, they just finished putting in a massive wind installation in Texas with Chinese manufactured wind turbines.
Right.
You know, I don't even know that it's a matter of
that equipment's done in China, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's a matter of the boat's going to leave without us or if the boat's already gone.
You know, driving across country like I did a few weeks ago, I was definitely heartened. There are a lot of places where there's some huge wind farms.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Along Route 70. They're out there, particularly in Kansas. It was heartening to see that.
Texas, Matt Osborne on the way to and from Netroots Nation drove past massive installations in Texas.
Right. So those wind farms are out there. People are building them. They've got to be coming on board in the grid and everything. So there's some farmers out there, and I heard too where there's some Indian tribes too with their land that are trying to get the wind farms going.
Yeah, because at least with the wind, it's the one thing that we can't figure out or haven't figured out yet, perhaps, I hope, how to steal from the Indians.
Yeah. Well, right, take advantage of that barren land. Get some money going. Get some cash flow going. It's a great thing. But, of course, the drawback is that heavy equipment used to make those things is just not developed here. That's the shame of the whole darn thing. And that, again, goes with the plan that Obama came up with, you know, to get the stimulus package going. That was something that should have been targeted big time to get heavy equipment.
Seems rather obvious, doesn't it?
Done here. Yeah, that should have been a big part of that, darn it. Big part of it.
Well, Andy, good to hear from you, my friend, and have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, twice in 1 week.
Yeah, if you find that Redwood City Seed Company, drop me an email.
All right, I will. I've seen pictures of those little varmints running around here. You know, there's a big thing at those seasonings for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And those little tiny chili peppers are just killer.
Right.
All right, Andy, take care. Thanks for calling in. All right, bye now.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye. Andy, formerly of New Jersey and now presently of Redwood City, California. And that closes off this Friday on the front porch, and it has gone by like summer lightning. I apologize to the other five blinking lights. I wish I knew who you were so that I could apologize personally. But you will just have to trust me when I say generically I'm sorry, but this has been a very, very busy night, and you guys have done a wonderful job. So I thank you very sincerely. Thanks to everybody who continues to contribute to keep the horn on the air. We are trying to get to $1,250 by August the 16th. And if everybody who can, kicks in, it would be easy. Thanks to those of you who have, because I know that individually none of it's easy. Thank you. Have a great weekend. We're going to have a wonderful show on Monday. I can't wait to talk to Tony Bourdain. And in the meantime, thanks to everybody who makes this all go. Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, Matt Osborne at Osborne Inc., OSBRNEINK.com is our Southeast correspondent. Reverbo is our op-ed columnist at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the cavalcade of crazy. My head writer is David in Tennessee. None of this happens without the dedicated efforts of Ben Birch, as discussed with Patrick,
WhiteRoseSociety.org is the very beating heart of the stream that carries this program and everything on the horn to you. Rick Smith is off this week. He will be having a fill-in host, so check in and help out. That show comes your way live on the horn. Or maybe not. I'm not sure. I don't know if he told. No, probably not live on the horn. So you'll just have to catch the replay stream. I was just thinking about that. And thanks also to our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, musical composer, and host in his own right, and a darn fine one, John Fox. He's been going like crazy this week. And, of course, I aggravate him periodically. Hey, John, can we do this? Can we do that? Thanks, John. Really. Keep sending your hopes and good wishes and prayers toward Judy Bonds as she fights a terrible battle with cancer. She is a big part of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I just love that bagpipe sound on guitar. That was really magic. I remember when it first came out. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn. We have completed a broadcast week here in the midst of the middle of August. And welcome to it. It is an absolutely beautiful day. It is a magnificent evening here in the hills and hollers of what's left of wild, wonderful West Bycod, Virginia, almost level West Virginia. An exquisite day. Someday it is actually my dream to, I don't know, get one of the, figure out some way to do Friday on the front porch, on a front porch, or even a back porch, or a side porch on a day like this. Because to come inside from that warm mid-August sun, it's a chore. It's a chore. It really is. And I would not come inside save for anything but this.
But we have a virtual front porch, and that sun still shines, and it's still warm on our faces. And the rock salt helps the ice to melt a little bit faster around those long necks in the zinc galvanized wash tub. They're up to their bottle caps in it. And help yourself. And take that ice cold bottle and roll it across your face. And feel that cool, cool goodness. If you opted for the sweet iced tea, well, it works just as well with a tall glass iced tea tumbler. Just feel that cool against the warmth that the mid-August sun puts upon your visage. It is a beautiful day, a beautiful evening. And thank you very kindly, first of all, for all the good wishes you have sent, all of you, Agnes's way. I told her and showed her emails and so forth, and she was touched. We always are by your kindness. It is it's just sweet and neighborly and good. Thanks to those of you who contributed last night and through the remainder of the day to try to get us up toward our middle of the month fundraising goal. We are that much closer. We are a little bit over $650 toward our middle of the month goal of $1,250. That's what keeps us on the air. That's what keeps things rolling here. And just a program reminder along those lines, because of Agnes's upcoming surgery, we will have a show on Monday. There will be no show on Tuesday or Wednesday when the surgery is actually scheduled. So please take that into account. I don't know if we'll have a Thursday or a Friday show. It really depends upon how the surgery goes. But on Monday, we do have a very special program for you. I'm just tickled pink. One of the people in entertainment, writing, TV, whatever, one of the few people, perhaps the only person of whom I may fairly say that I'm an actual fan, is going to be on the program. Anthony Bourdain, author of Medium Raw, A Bloody Valentine to the World of Food and the People Who Cook, will be on the program at the very beginning of the program. And I encourage you, first of all, to get the book and read it however you may. It is enjoyable in the extreme. And then to tune in, and as well to tune in for the conversation. Being a fan, I've heard a lot of interviews. And I can only imagine what it must be like to be an author and do as many interviews promoting a book as what Mr. Bourdain has done, and still try to somehow keep them fresh and keep them informative. Somewhere along the way, there has to be an element of, I don't know, Bob Seger moaning the lyrics to Turn the Page, or Spinal Tap yelling Hello Cleveland in Denver. It has to kick in. So as a favor to myself and as a means of trying to let Mr. Bourdain know that I actually read the book, and because I read the books I do interviews on, that's why there's not a whole bunch of book interviews here. But to let him know not only that I've read the book, but that I also am cognizant of the fact that these things probably are not enjoyable. If we can make it enjoyable for him, it will be that much the better. So you can hear the attempt Monday evening, starting at the very beginning of the program. And I'm ferociously going back over my already dog-eared and paper-clipped and tabbed and post-it noted and annotated copy to see if I can't sort of pull out things that the average I've got to do an interview today radio personality probably slid right past. That's my hope, at least. That's my hope. So that's the program announcements. Just remember, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday of next week are maybes based upon Agnes's condition post-surgery. Okie doke. Cool. Now, as to Friday on the front porch, I thought we might begin the program this evening
with a visit to Bob's virtual interweb tubes blackboard. You know, Glenn Beck has a real one because he's got a real production budget. I have to have an imaginary one. Hell, this isn't video.